A podcast of the cinema. You are Dave White. I'm Alonzo Duralde. We both write movie reviews for The Wrap. I'm also the film critic and TV recapper at What the Flick on the Young Turks Network on YouTube. And we are married to each other.
And not to others.
Correct.
Only to each other.
Sorry, Barbara Mandrell. That was her song, right?
I can't remember.
Married but not to each other? I thought that was her.
Tammy Wynette or Barbara Mandrell?
You're the one who's the nut on country. You're supposed to know this stuff.
It's one of them. Right. I'm thinking you're right.
Okay.
That it's Barbara Mandrell.
So welcome to our
Linoleum Knife Summer Super Splash.
Woo!
It's the Super Splash.
Okay,
you've been waiting for.
You know when people who have a cat, not that we are those people, leave town for a week, and they think if they just leave the giant bag of cat food, that's going to, cover everything for the week while they're gone.
This is your giant bag of cat food.
This is your giant bag of cat food.
Here's what you're getting.
We're taking a rare trip out of town, so we are not only putting together several of the podcasts that we do every week, we are making them available to the general public. Many of these often only available to our wonderful Patreon subscribers.
Nothing that you said just made sense. Okay, here's what's happening. You were correct that we're leaving town.
Yes.
You have that information right.
Oh, good.
While we are gone to Atlanta to be with your family and the new babies that mm-hmm. we have not yet seen, which is why everyone's going to Atlanta
right.
to look at the new babies mm-hmm. and say, look how cute that new baby is. Even if it's not that cute, we're just going to be, look how cute that new baby is.
But that's a cute baby.
They're cute babies, though. While we're there, we're not going to talk to you people at all.
Radio on the, podcast silence.
No podcasting for 8 entire days.
Well, I am actually going to be guest starring on my friend Kurt Holman's right. show, The Comics Canon, but that's it. Our podcasting, no.
Okay, so perhaps you've downloaded this episode or it's come up in your subscription on iTunes, and you notice that it's more hours long than normal. Well, here's why. We have other podcasts. And they are available to people who subscribe to us on Patreon. One of those podcasts is LKTV.
A podcast of the television.
Another one of those podcasts is Linoleum Knife and Fork.
A podcast of the food, a.k.a. a food podcast hosted by two film critics.
And then there's Linoleum Nights, which is its own thing. But here's what's happening for you right now. It's the Linoleum Knife Summer Super Splash. And you are getting one giant podcast that's Linoleum Knife. And then we will smoothly segue into LKTV. And then we will smoothly segue into Linoleum Knife and Fork. Unless, of course, we do Fork first and then LKTV. We haven't decided yet that's happening. What's happening with that?
Now, if you're a Patreon subscriber already,
you get all these anyway.
Bless your heart.
But if you're not, here's what you're missing.
But yes, but those of you who have not taken the plunge yet, here's a little summer sample.
A summer super splash sample.
A summer super splash sample of the things that we do every week that you, too, could be privy to if you became a Patreon subscriber.
The summer super splash just came into my head because our friend Chris Cummins mm-hmm. is always posting, and I mean always posting, about vintage Archie comics.
Right.
And all those vintage, they might still do them, but the Archie comic back in the day, it's the summer,
spectacular.
Spectacular. It's the winter funnies, and so that's, yeah, it occurred to me.
That's great. You really sold that story.
I knew everyone was going to dig that.
Yeah.
That explanation.
You're telling me that my stuff is not making any sense.
No, my stuff makes perfect sense. Uh-huh. It's just slow and disjointed.
Yeah, and you just repeated exactly what I had just said before about the whole thing.
You said it in a condensed way that wasn't extremely explanatory.
That's great. Okay, so you know you can listen to this show in one long binge if you want. Or space it out, because you've got a whole week without us to deal with.
Enjoy a full day with us.
Yeah, or meet it out over the week in little dribs and drabs while you're by the pool or, you know, on the treadmill. Or
yeah,
whatever.
People want to hear film criticism by the pool. They want to hear about television shows and baking by the pool.
They might.
No one wants that.
You don't know.
No, here's when people are listening to this?
At work.
When they are otherwise miserable. When they are in their car driving to a job. Mm-hmm. Or when they are at a job. Yes. And they hate the people around them, so they put the headphones on.
To tune them out. Or at the gym, because nobody likes that.
We are marginally more good than things you hate.
That's going on a t-shirt, I think. Way to brand the show.
Yes. So there are movies that opened this week. Well, one big movie opened this week.
That's the one we saw.
War for the Planet of the Apes.
Yes.
And one little movie opened this week. Alejandro Jodorowsky's Endless Poetry.
There are other films.
That I saw.
We just didn't see them.
Right. Like, we haven't gotten to Lady Macbeth yet.
Yes, which we were going to. We haven't gotten to Wish Upon, which we are not going
we're
to.
We're not. I'm not seeing Wish Upon.
No.
The reviews have been terrible, and that's all I needed to know.
Yeah.
We still haven't seen A Ghost Story.
Yes. I have been doing Outfest for the last week and a half, so that has sort of severely curtailed my
ability. Maybe it's playing in Atlanta. Maybe we just go see it in Atlanta.
Do you really want to go see a movie on our week off?
But if it's a movie we both want to see, like A Ghost Story, and I do want to see it.
Maybe. I kind of like the idea of not, but whatever, we'll see.
Listen, you never know, the young people, also perhaps the old people in the family might be like, let's all go see a movie.
Hey everybody, let's go watch Rooney Mara eat a pie for the first time ever.
They're now selling this film, by the way.
Uh-huh.
On Facebook, at least, with a video about how to make the pie that's in the film.
Oh, smart.
It is a vegan chocolate pie. And it's, you know, that everything's shot top down now. Like,
oh, yeah.
The camera's faced.
Those cooking videos.
Facing directly into the bowl and not, like, off to the side.
Right. It's always, like, hands quickly dumping, you know, corn syrup.
People doing things much more quickly than
the
time it takes in actual life. It is a vegan chocolate pie.
Huh.
It looks like it might taste okay.
What's the crust?
Well, it's almond meal and olive oil and maple syrup, which, by the way...
Like in the Gwyneth Berry Crumble.
Which in the Gwyneth Paltrow Berry Crumble from the It's All Good cookbook, which I'm devoted to. Don't laugh. If this is your first time, you don't even know. If this is your first time listening, you have no idea how good that cookbook is. It's really good. Here's why. Gwyneth Paltrow didn't even write the damn thing.
Her personal chef did.
Julia Tertian, who was a very cool chef, wrote it.
She's a genius.
And she's great. Anyway, the GP, the goop crumble, the crumble base is almond meal.
Maple syrup
and olive oil.
Yeah.
And it's very good.
Oh, so good.
However, I'm not sure how it holds together as a pie crust.
Well, maybe it's got different proportions.
It might. And so I'd be interested in trying this. The consistency and the sweetness comes from dates.
Huh.
That you food process.
Okay. I guess
I have also used in a Christmas cake.
Right.
That was really, really delicious.
So
that doesn't surprise me either.
Is this like cocoa powder? Like there's nothing, because there's no milk in any of the, if it's a vegan, right?
No, there's no animal anything in there.
So it's not even like if it were a 90%, you know, cacao bar, that other 10% is still milk, right?
I don't know. I can't remember what else is in it. There's some sort of chocolate thing in it.
Well, but in general, if when there's a percentage bar, you know, of your chocolate.
I don't know the answer to that. What's your timer for?
Is
your neti pot
ready? My neti pot is ready.
Hang on.
I'll be right back and probably sounding better. My air sacs never felt so good.
We're back.
Yes.
This is a podcast where we talk about films and not just neti pots and not just
desserts.
Recipes for desserts.
Although that was a film tie-in recipe.
It was. Anyway. It was. So we're still on topic.
Yes.
Ruthlessly
on topic. That's this show.
Why don't we talk about War for the Planet of the Apes?
Sure. So it's the third of the new Planet of the Apes, or the reboot Planet of the Apes. And it comes with a very convenient previously on at the very beginning, just in case you missed Rise and Dawn.
Well, it's a series of
title cards.
Title cards.
But it gives you the idea. Yeah. It tells you where you are in the story.
It's very methodical, too. It's like, in Rise for the Planet of the Apes, this happened. And then in Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, this happened. And now, all this stuff is happening.
Yes.
Yeah.
So basically,
tell them the stuff that's happening.
So the apes are trying to
live, not be killed.
They want a homeland, and what's left of the army, or at least the chunk of it that is being led by Woody Harrelson, is out to get them all. Let's see. God, it's been a while since I've seen this movie now, so I'm trying to remember all the things that happened. Woody Harrelson's men show up. At the beginning of the film, we see a bunch of soldiers trying to
invade. Woody Harrelson plays Marlon Brando.
Yes, basically. The Colonel. A bunch of soldiers invade an ape stronghold, but they are repelled, and a handful of humans are kept alive to go back and tell Woody Harrelson, buzz off and leave us alone.
And in case you missed that, someone has actually spray-painted the words "Ape Apocalypse Now"
in one of the tunnels.
In one of the tunnels, yeah. Underneath the main action.
Get it? But of course, he doesn't buzz off. Instead, he sneaks in the middle of the night. They attack the compound and they kill the several close family members of Caesar.
Yes,
played by Andy Serkis.
Yes.
So while the rest of the apes move on to wherever it is they're going to go next, Caesar goes off on his own to seek revenge. A couple of his close counselors follow with him. They find a human child who has been rendered mute, who is apparently a victim of some virus that's now happening, that's sort of the next wave of, you know, humanity in this future world where they don't speak.
Right.
And they find an older monkey, who's named Bad Ape, who had lived in a zoo, and they find him in what's left of an old ski resort, and he joins them, and he can actually he and Caesar, I think, are the only two that speak English, right? Everybody else, all the other apes,
they all
like sign language.
They all understand when they are spoken to.
Yeah.
By Caesar.
Oh, Judy Greer speaks English.
In English, yes. And Steve Zahn's character, Bad Ape,
yeah.
He speaks, you know, rudimentary, sort of childlike,
right,
English. And the rest of them use sign.
Mm-hmm.
However... do something with your phone.
Sorry.
Your phone is making a noise.
Outfest is happening, so it's just like it's text all the time.
I know. So my concern through the entire film was, okay, Caesar can't die because who's going to teach them all to speak English when it comes time for them to be actual Planet of the Apes, where they run everything and wear clothes.
Right.
and all speak perfectly.
Like Maurice Evans.
Because he's the only one left of them who can still speak.
No, his daughter-in-law.
All right. Okay, yeah, her too.
Yeah, but not a lot of them.
But yeah, all right.
Okay,
still.
So, ultimately...
They just kept nagging at me for the whole film.
So Caesar comes to realize that because he was not there to lead his people, they all got captured, and they're all being held prisoner in this base that's being run by Woody Harrelson, and which is a forced labor camp, and they are put to use for sort of nefarious purposes, and he has to figure out how to liberate them and how to kind of face off with Woody Harrelson in one last stand. You know, it's funny. Bibbs was saying that the further away he gets from this movie, the less he likes it because it just feels like an amalgam of all these other like war movies, basically.
Okay.
And there are definitely some greatest hits happening. You know, there are shout outs to John Ford and to the Old Testament and to, you know,
there is a lot of
referential.
There's a lot of referential material,
yeah.
In the film. Yes, John Ford. Francis Ford Coppola,
yeah,
you name, you know, a war movie,
right?
An escape movie,
mm-hmm.
And yes, if you have seen a lot of these sorts of films, if you are, you know, literate in that, in the things that it's referencing, you'll see it. But I, unlike Bibbs, William Bibbiani of the B Movies Podcast, that's who we're talking about,
and Cancel Too Soon.
I don't find that to be a problem. I think that this is the best of the three new Apes films. Yes.
I still like the first one the best, I think.
I found this one to be the most moving, the most exciting.
Hmm.
I think Steve Zahn is so terrific.
He is great.
In this film.
Andy Serkis is so great in all of these.
Andy Serkis is consistently good in all of them.
Yeah.
But I didn't know I could feel a sort of pathetic affection for someone called Bad Ape, but now I do.
Here's where this movie kind of turned me off a little bit. The whole notion of, you know, Caesar making the mistake of getting so caught up in vengeance that it makes his people suffer, and he's a, you know, it's a mistake of leadership.
Mm-hmm.
I think the movie illustrates that really well. And then when he's captured by Woody Harrelson, Woody Harrelson gives a speech explaining all of those things in
sure.
case someone wasn't paying attention. It's like, I hate when movies do that.
Well, there were people in my theater yesterday not paying attention.
Yeah, well,
here's how I know. I had to get up and move away from them.
Talking or phone?
Both.
Ugh.
At the same time, in some cases. And I did not have to regulate because someone else did.
Nice.
Another audience member was like, "Bah!" about it. So all I had to do was get up and move.
I was at a screening yesterday, and there was a phone that I guess was right in front of me, and I didn't see it. But Manola Dargis saw it, and she was like, "Turn off your phone, please."
Oh, she said please?
Yes.
Yeah, see, I'm past that.
Well, they get a please the first time.
Nope.
From me.
Nope. That's the rule now with me. You don't get a please ever, not even the first time, because you should know better already. If you're grown, and they always are, you should already know better, unless you've never been to a movie theater before, in which case someone was probably holding your hand when you walked in. So, no, please. You don't deserve a please. You're breaking the rule, and you know you are, and you don't care. You don't get a please.
So somebody
turn off that phone.
So somebody else beat you to the punch?
Yeah, they did. And I felt really nice about that.
Were there actual
because I got to be chill. I knew they were going to ignore the person,
uh-huh.
and that was going to be a ruckus. And I thought, what if I just went down? I was at the arc light.
Uh-huh.
What if I just went down to the front?
Uh-huh.
And I mean the front.
Right.
This was one of the big houses.
Yeah.
You know, where there's that gap, that walking area between the main batch of seats.
And like four front rows.
First two circular rows that sit. I went down to those.
Ooh.
I've never done that at the arc light before. Guess how big that screen is in front of your face.
It's huge.
Enormous.
Yeah.
And fun.
All right.
It was fun. It reminded me of being like a little kid and always rushing down to the front row.
Sometimes.
I was down for it.
There's something to be said about it being bigger than your field of vision.
It was much bigger than my field of vision. And So, you know, thanks, jerks with the phones, because you helped me have an even better time.
Getting away from you.
Here's what I really liked the most about this.
Okay.
It stretched out and took its time.
Yes.
And made really lovely use of quiet moments and long stretches where people are communicating with gestures. Mm-hmm. I say people. Apes are communicating with gestures,
right,
with glances, with, you know, secret codes. And it was not nonstop noise, 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 loud, 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 action, action, action. Even the score.
The score is exceptional.
The score is so good and knows when to pump it up and knows when to hold back.
Mm-hmm.
I really like this.
Michael Giacchino has two great scores in theaters right now. One is War for the Planet of the Apes. One is Spider-Man Homecoming.
Oh, he did that too?
Yeah. They're both super effective. And, you know, and they're varied. It's not like just sort of like, you know, repetitions of the same theme over and over again. They help the movie along without stealing focus. I'm a big fan of both of them right now.
There is, for me, a kind of irritation inherent in being delivered another sequel from another franchise. As much as I may like the films, I resent that I have to go.
Well,
does that make sense?
I guess, but I think this is one of those ones where it wasn't like the story ended in the previous movie and now we have to tack on something else because the last one made money. Like,
right.
This is was clearly designed to be at least a trilogy, if not more.
Yes. You know? Where I was going with this was exactly what you just said. Yeah. And also, this is a good enough film, much more than I had any reason to expect it to be, within 10 minutes, I was, okay, it's fine. I don't resent being here.
Right.
I have a reserve of resentment that lives inside of me for any and all franchises and sequels.
Yeah, you didn't have to go see Transformers 5, so shut up.
I haven't been to it yet. And I probably won't get to it now because it's on its way out of theaters already. Like, it didn't make the money they wanted it to make.
Yeah.
And I just haven't had time to get to it. And, you know, the farther away I get from the opening date, the more I think, it's fine. I've seen all the other Transformers movies. And as much as I legitimately like the Transformers movies, I know, I apologize. I might not get to this one.
I recommend, there's a podcast called We Hate Movies, and they actually went back and watched all five of the Transformers.
Why did they do that?
Over five episodes.
You're not supposed to do that.
Heaven knows. But
you're supposed to see it once.
It was fascinating.
And go, that was fun.
It was fascinating how they talked about how slipshod the storytelling is as far as, like, things not being consistent from film to film.
They don't care.
They don't care.
It's like a sitcom from the 1970s where things just end
and then the next episode, it's as though it
never happened. Every day is a new, fresh day for everyone in the cast.
And Akiva Goldsman is, like, apparently running the sort of quote-unquote writer's room for this thing. Because that's what they're doing for these movies now.
The writer's bouncy house.
They actually have a writer's bouncy house, exactly. Because they're going to crank out a bunch more, apparently, even though this one is sort of not doing
a lot.
Yeah. Like, the Bumblebee movie is coming out in the next couple of years.
That's going to be...
I think Michael Bay is done, but the franchise is just getting warmed up, apparently. Anyway, I didn't listen to all the episodes because I just could not relive those
films. Why would you?
I did listen to the one for the Transformers The Last Night, and it's hilarious. There's a whole thing.
It's called We Hate Movies.
We Hate Movies. Right. And the guys doing it are very funny, and they do very funny voices. Like, they do a really funny recurring, like, Mark Wahlberg impersonation and a really good Optimus Prime impersonation. And if you say certain things in the voice of Optimus Prime, it's extra funny. And I don't mean, like, bad swears or whatever. I mean just sort of, like, mundane, you know. Like, I was in the express line, and the person in front of me had 17 items. You know, that just made me mad, but, you know, anyway... They're funnier than
that. Is it funnier than that?
It is funnier than that.
All right, good. Good. It should be.
You're hilarious.
I didn't say that I was. Mm. I never claimed to be that. So,
then don't judge me.
All right. Here's what I saw. You didn't see it.
Yes.
Endless Poetry. Now, you have also not seen The Dance of Reality. Am I correct?
I have never seen a film by Alejandro Jodorowsky. I know.
What?
It is one of the lapses.
I'm sorry. But I have to stop now.
It is one of the lapses in my cinematic education.
First of all, how did I not know this about you?
We never.
Was I just not paying attention?
It's quite possible.
Secondly, how did you accomplish this? Because this is kind of an accomplishment. You're a film critic,
I know.
And you've been obsessed with film your entire life.
I know.
How did you miss these movies?
Well, they were hard to come by for a long time.
Okay.
You know, and I remember reading about El Topo in cult movies.
Yeah.
And thinking, And so,
okay,
I was a young cineast when Santa Sangre opened.
Okay.
And I just thought, and I never got around to it. And then I've just all this time, I've never gotten around to seeing a Jodorowsky film. And I need to, Jodorowsky, however he says it.
He's Chilean, so it's, you know, Spanish. And,
yeah, but it's also Polish, and, you know.
Meh.
Anyway, I've never seen a Jodorowsky film, so I need to. I would like to see this one. I read your review, and it sounded like something I'd want to see.
Well, first you got to watch The Dance of Reality.
Do I have to?
You should. It's a sequel. This one is a sequel to The Dance of Reality.
That, but I'm just saying, like, as somebody who's seen both, if I were to walk into this one cold, would it work?
You could walk into it cold, but the pleasure of seeing all the people from the earlier film is diminished.
Well, you know, I have a real problem with sequels and franchise films, so, you know, I have a harbor of resentment for them. How you like that, petard?
I guess you're right.
Feeling hoist?
I've been hoisted.
So, yeah.
You know what's funny? I walked into this press screening not knowing that it was going to be a sequel.
How do you do that?
I'll tell you how I do that.
You live in a bubble.
Just in case anyone hasn't heard me talk about this before, I'm very good at shutting out pre-release information.
Okay, I understand that about, like, you know, sci-fi franchises and superhero movies.
And I mean, I'm really good at shutting out pre-release
information. I didn't realize it extended to art house.
It extends to everything. Here's what I will do. If it's an art house film, and it's from a director who I've never heard of,
mm-hmm.
I'll go find out who that person is.
Right.
And then I might accidentally find out what's going to happen in the movie that I'm about to see. But in general, I keep it locked down. It's so easy not to... People think that they have no choice, but it is so easy not to pay attention. I'll give you some tips right now. When you're in a movie theater and the trailers come on, close your eyes.
And plug your ears.
Here's why that works. You don't even have to plug your ears. Because here's what every trailer is right now. That's actually how most trailers are now. So you could be watching, you could be sitting there with your eyes closed, and you won't even know what movie it is that the trailer is that you're looking at. Boom. Unless it's Girls Trip.
Boom.
Yeah. Unless it's Girls Trip, yes, where funny lines are being thrown at you.
Right. I can't wait to see Girls Trip.
Yeah, I can't wait to see Girls Trip, too. Everything, if it's an action movie or a fantasy, sci-fi, you know, Planet of the Apes, Star Wars, something.
The Dark Tower.
Any horror film is just noises and shrieks. Then you will be happy that you didn't see any of those. If you're on Twitter, mm-hmm, or Facebook, mm-hmm, just don't click on the thing.
Okay, I don't click on things.
Okay,
but headlines are on Twitter and Facebook, and headlines tell things.
I have removed and unfollowed the people who do this to me.
So are you not on film Twitter?
I am, but selectively.
Right.
I follow film critics whose opinions I respect. And I don't follow the people who write about film in a, this is the hypest ish! I don't follow those people.
Right.
You know, the closest I come to following those folks is a few of our friends who do junket work.
Right.
But I just, I'm really good at bleeping over whatever it is.
All right. Okay, so you went to see Endless Poetry, and luckily you had seen The Dance of Reality.
The Dance of Reality. And
because how would you have known to do that research if you hadn't?
Listen, you're muddying the water, Mr. I've never seen a Jodorowsky film. We got to get you watching El Topo and the Holy Mountain. Those two, at least.
Yes, but I think I should see them projected. No?
Either or.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it would be, obviously it would be best if you were in a theater with a big screen and you had just eaten, you know, a brownie.
I wasn't going to go that far.
You don't have to. Yeah. So, you know, he finished a 23-year hiatus of no movies before The Dance of Reality.
Right.
Now, The Dance of Reality was his film about growing up in Chile with a cruel and abusive father, mm-hmm, played in Dance of Reality and in Endless Poetry by his eldest son, Brontis Jodorowsky,
right,
who was the little kid in El Topo.
Yeah.
And then another kid named Jeremiah something, I'm sorry, I blanked on his name, plays young Alejandro in that film. In this movie, he is played by the now teenage kid from the first film, and then played by Jodorowsky's younger son, Adan. Adan, who is, all his kids are French. Hmm. They all grew up in France. But they speak Spanish too, obviously. And different moms along the way.
I bet the Chileans are busting their chops about speaking Spanish like French people.
Probably, maybe.
I think I've told this story before, but my oldest sister, Maria, has, yes, lived in Spain for like,
for longer than she lived in the United States,
yeah,
and she was born in the United,
yeah,
States.
Yeah, like she's lived there for something like 35 years.
Yeah.
Going on 40. And I asked her last time we were there, I said, so do you pass now? Is your Spanish, you know, that of a native? She goes, they still know I'm not from here.
But it's not because she doesn't know the words, it's because of her accent.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
The way it sounds.
Yes.
She goes, they know I'm not from here, but now they just think I'm from Cuba?
Yeah.
And that's when I realized, okay, if you can live for decades in a country and they still can bust you as a non-native for your, you,
yeah,
know, choice of diphthongs.
Yeah, but those kids grew up with, yeah, you're right. They grew up with...
My sister grew up with my parents.
Yeah,
so, that's true. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
That's true,
so,
yeah.
So in Chile, I'm sure they're like, French. French people coming around here trying to speak Chilean Spanish. Who the hell do they think they are?
So this time around, the eldest son plays Jodorowsky's father, and the youngest son plays young Jodorowsky.
Right.
The mother is played by Pamela Flores. Again, she is a Chilean soprano. And the reason that matters is because in both films, she sings all of her dialogue operatically.
When playing the mother.
When playing the mother.
Yeah.
Yes. And the score that she's singing to has been composed by Adán Jodorowsky. Uh-huh. He's the composer. So this is a big family and friends situation here. Pamela Flores also plays a second character in this film named Stella Diaz, who is young Jodorowsky's first muse slash lover. Mm-hmm. And she's as diametrically opposite as she can be to the mother character. She stomps into this, you know, poetry bar. And this is meant to be, you know, the 50s, and she looks like someone from, you know, CBGB in 1979. Yeah. She's just dressed like a proto punk rock person, the big red wig, and she walks in the bar and she just looks angrily at everyone and she says, you know, "Ustedes son nada." Subtitled, "You people are nothing." And he's smitten, you know, immediately. He also falls in with a group of bohemians who are writers and painters and dancers and, you know, actors and singers. And so he leaves home. He abandons his abusive father, refuses to work in the general store that the father runs. And he goes and becomes part of an art crowd.
In Santiago?
Yeah, but then he has to sort of navigate his way through them, too, because anybody who knows what that's like in your 20s, when all your friends are artists or musicians or writers, and you're all hanging out, it's exhausting. And you know I'm right.
Everyone's so judgy.
And everyone's so needy. Everyone's so dramatic.
Oh, so much drama.
And the film portrays this sort of situation with him, you know, and he's so like, "I gotta get away. Now I have to get away
from you,
from y'all." I'm going to Paris. And I mean, he loves them.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, they're tired.
They're a lot to take.
They're a lot to take. And so, along the way, you know, the usual, I'm telling you things that you don't have reference points for, but the usual Jodorowsky, you know, themes and imagery, Catholicism and, you know, destroying the parents and...
I watched
all of these things happen in the film.
I watched the trailer online when I was posting your review on the wrap, and I love the theatricality of like the obviously sort of like, you know, stage flat of a steam locomotive that's being carried
by people,
by stagehands.
Yeah. Stagehands dressed in these black body stockings sort of slink into a scene and hand someone a cup, you know, and then slink back out. And it's all very much, you see the seams of the theatrical nature of the film.
Sure.
And the inventive way that they got around, you know, budget problems.
Yeah.
Oh, where are we going to get a vintage steam locomotive? Well, we're not. We're going to
make a flat one.
We're going to make a flat and we're going to have human beings carry it, clearly carrying it into the frame. So it's inventive, beautiful looking. There are some truly magnificent crowd sequences where at one point he is dressed as Pierrot, the
clown,
and which if you don't know what that is, just go Google that.
P-I-E-R-R-O-T.
Yeah. And he's, you know, in the middle of a parade with like hundreds of people dressed as demons and hundreds of people dressed as skeletons. It's just, it's gorgeous. There's so much beautiful visual storytelling happening here and so much that is actually quite moving, because as the film progresses, and this is the same thing that happened in The Dance of Reality, Jodorowsky himself is in the film, standing in the frame, narrating and interacting with the characters. Very much like Michelet in the Michelet film for Lifetime.
Yes, I'm sure that's what they were thinking about when they made the Michelet first, film for Lifetime.
Listen, it's the first thing that popped into my head.
You're killing me, Smalls.
I cover the waterfront.
You
all
do
right?
Indeed.
So, ultimately, it's a film about what it's like to understand your life as a very old man. He's 88 now. And how, you know, if you could stand there as an old person and talk to the person you were when you were 22.
Right.
And make them understand. What would you say to them? Hmm. And that's what he says to these characters.
That's awesome.
And it's also about forgiving the worst sort of parent. You know, he actually says, this is not a spoiler, there's no such thing as that. He says to his father, "By not loving me, you taught me that love is an absolute."
Hmm.
And it's very moving.
Hmm.
I recommend this highly.
I'd like to see it.
Yeah, both films.
All right.
Listen, we'll start you with El Topo.
Really? That's the beginner Jodorowsky? I thought that was the more advanced.
You know what? You jump in that pool and learn to swim.
Fine.
We got some business to attend to now.
I think I was always sort of annoyed by, you know, the famous Jodorowsky quote about that film, right?
I don't know. Remind me.
If you are a limited person, El Topo is a limited film. If you are a great person, El Topo is a great film. You want to make me not see your movie? You give me a quote like that, old man.
He has never lacked for self-esteem.
No.
Never. Even in this film, the young him announces to his friends, "I'm leaving all of you behind. I'm going to France. I'm going to join André Breton's group. I'm going to save surrealism. Goodbye. I bid you all adieu." So, yeah, he's always been very sure of himself. Yeah.
Before we get into our last film, I can't do my review.
Do we call it a film?
Well, whatever it is. I can't do a review of Dunkirk just yet because the embargo hasn't lifted. Although,
right,
people have already been giving their reactions on social media and stuff. So I think I am allowed to say it's really great. And we'll talk about it when we get back from vacation.
Yes.
Not really great, however, is the latest Warner Brothers...
Hang on.
Not anywhere in the neighborhood of great.
I'm holding in my hand a copy of the thing we're about to discuss.
Yes.
And it is a DVD.
Yes.
And it is wrapped in a cardboard, glossy, colorful sleeve. And if it wouldn't injure me, I would actually wipe my ass with it. If it were soft and I could do that, I would wipe my ass with this.
So this is the new release from Warner Brothers Animation.
I would like to throw it into the street and watch a car run over it. Why don't you tell people what it is?
It's called Tom and Jerry, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Now, apparently this has been a thing for a while now. Like, they did an animated Wizard of Oz where they insert Tom and Jerry.
So the Zika virus is a thing, too.
This is Warner Brothers, which owns the rights to Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory and owns the rights to Tom and Jerry, deciding, hey, what if we mashed them up? So this is an animated remake of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory down to, like, the songs and, you know, a lot of specific shots completely lifted, maybe even rotoscoped, I don't know. But with Tom and Jerry in them, and Tom and Jerry figuring into the plot.
Yeah.
And on paper, I'm already not down for this idea, but, you know, I try to think, well, you know, maybe there's
some...
It is some
conceptually something. A terrible idea.
Yeah, so from the get-go, it's already a nightmare. And then we actually watch the thing, and it's worse than I would have imagined.
I devoted 15 minutes of my actual attention to it, and then the rest of it, I was sort of in and out of the living room, noticing things as they happened,
because
I couldn't bear sitting still and looking at it, thinking that I was wasting my life.
I started taking notes, and then I can't remember if I kept taking notes or just finally stopped, because I just couldn't even...
It is ghastly.
My brain couldn't handle it. At the top of the list...
It is better than Romeo and Juliet sealed with a kiss, the all-animated, all-seal version of Romeo and Juliet. With a happy ending, where they live at the end.
But, you know...
But not much better.
I mean, the whole notion of these movies, for one thing, it's like The Wizard of Oz and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory don't need to be made more kid-friendly.
Correct.
They're already kid-friendly. Like, little kids see and love these movies. So it's not like you're doing, you know, Tom and Jerry the Wild Bunch or something, where you're, you know, doing the, like, more family-friendly spin on some material. So already I don't get what it's there for. The movie kind of turns them into the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Sure.
Like, they're the reason why the candy store has a crate of Wonka bars that they can go on sale immediately after the Golden Ticket campaign is supposedly over.
Right.
They're the reason why the coin winds up in the sewer grate where Charlie picks it up. They all this sort of behind the scenes stuff, it's actually they're the ones responsible for making it happen. In the original film, if you are a fan and you know the trivia, when they have the guy who claims to have found the last ticket and it turns out to be a fake, the reclusive Paraguayan millionaire or whatever, the picture that they show on TV of that guy is Martin Bormann.
Yeah.
Famed Nazi.
Right.
In this movie, Martin Bormann is played by Droopy.
Right.
For no real reason. Slugworth.
Say I don't like you like Droopy, because that's how I feel about this film.
I don't like you.
Exactly. Thank you.
Slugworth becomes a much larger character in this version because Tom and Jerry are actively trying to stop his schemes. So he gets to sing I Want It Now first before Veruca does.
Why not?
A slightly different version, but it doesn't work at all. There's this whole thing involving Grandpa Joe leaving the golden ticket at home, and then Jerry the Mouse finding it, and then the two of them trying to get it to them, and a bird takes it, and they get it back, and eventually Jerry has to run up the leg of Grandpa Joe's pants to put it in his pocket, and that gets a lot closer than you wanted to see. The whole Tom and Jerry relationship makes no sense because, like, now they're supposed to be friends and they hang out. But at the beginning of the movie, when they're both really hungry, Tom is trying to eat him.
Right.
There's a mouse Oompa Loompa. There's the guy singing the Willy Wonka role is no Gene Wilder.
That is correct.
They give the whole There's No Earthly Way of Knowing poem to the mouse Oompa Loompa.
And they really do scrimp on the horror of that tunnel.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a little bit psychedelic, but there is no, like, worm or chicken being beheaded or anything.
Nope.
In the fizzy lifting drink sequence, Jerry now climbs on Grandpa Joe's back and burps him, rather than Grandpa Joe figuring out on his own.
Yeah.
There's a car chase with, like, mine cars. We see Mr. Salt and Veruca come out of the furnace, and he suddenly becomes a disciplinarian.
I think they get it.
I'm just going down my list because I did write it. Like, there's no Wonka Mobile. There's no Wonka Wash. They cut the You'll Get No Commercials line from the last Oompa Loompa song until the closing credits. There's a lot of goofy visual gags involving Wonka Vision that eat up a lot of the last part of it. It's terrible. It's like any parent that shows this to their child is doing them a disservice.
Yeah, you're a bad parent. It's like 75 minutes long.
Yeah, just show them the original and...
There's literally no need
for this. This
doesn't need to exist.
Yeah.
Show your kid Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. They will be scared of the tunnel sequence. Good.
Yes.
They should be. It's supposed to be scary. And then this tunnel sequence will be over, and it'll take them straight into joy
right
at the end of the film. And they'll forget how scared they were, and they'll think that they are a big boy or a big girl who didn't cry and stop watching the movie during the tunnel sequence.
Or maybe they did cry, but they kept watching the movie.
I saw that movie when I was like 5, and that tunnel sequence scared me.
Oh,
I was
me
with
too.
My mother, but I kept going.
Ditto. I was 4 when this movie came out, and it's one of the first movies I remember seeing in a theater.
Yeah, same here.
And, my one of my mentors was Edward Margulies, who was the editor of Movie Line magazine, and his father, Stan Margulies, produced the film. And one time we were having a conversation about what's the first movie you remember seeing, and I told him, actually, it was Willy Wonka, and he goes, oh, God, you never had a chance. I sent you some letters. Oh, well, first, what's your DVD pick?
Canopy.
Ah, yes.
It's not a movie. It's not even a DVD. It's a streaming service.
A free one.
Well, I don't know if it's free for everyone.
Well, it's free if you have a library card and your library is participating.
Ask your local library if they are participating in the Canopy. Because if they are, K-A-N-O-P-Y. Manola told us about... Manola Dargis was a guest on the show a few weeks ago, and she told us about this after the show was over. We live in Los Angeles, and if you have a Los Angeles library card, you get to use Canopy, and it's free. And you get to stream all the Criterion Collection
almost
that they have that on they Canopy.
Have. They apparently also have a
bunch
of...
They have a lot of it.
They also have a lot of the Kino Lorber library,
yep,
including, like, I Am Not Your Negro,
yeah,
which is brand new.
And so, ask your local library. And if they don't participate in this, say, why not? Get us some Canopy. I'm not saying you shouldn't subscribe to Filmstruck, because you should.
Absolutely.
For the beauty of it in your own home. And while you're on Filmstruck, you should watch Alonzo Duralde introducing 13 LGBT titles.
You should.
Because he's on Filmstruck introducing things, wearing a nice shirt and jacket. That I ironed that shirt.
Actually, you didn't.
I did. No. And then I sent it with you on your way to Atlanta, and then you steamed it.
Actually, they steamed it
for you, yeah.
They had a wardrobe professional.
They had a wardrobe person steam it for you, but I did the initial ironing.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. No, you didn't. Who irons your shirts in this house? That's
generally
me.
Generally speaking, you do.
That's right.
I didn't want the professional to feel, you know, neglected on this one.
The professional is not listening.
You don't know.
I know. it's more likely that someone is not listening.
Well, yes, that is true.
We can always assume that someone is not listening to this show.
Good point.
This teeny tiny cult following show.
So this week has been Outfest, and one of the highlights for me was getting to see Jeffrey Schwartz's new documentary, The Fabulous Alan Carr, on the big screen.
I saw it too. It's very good.
It's a lot of fun.
Guess who's in it?
I'm interviewed.
Alonzo Duralde is in this film.
It is true. Wearing a shirt you ironed.
Wearing a shirt that I ironed.
It was fun to do, and I've always been a fan of Alan Carr, who's had a really just singularly unusual career. But this was a guy who came from, like, the Midwest and was a fat kid with glasses who loved show business and, you know, became a hugely successful producer before becoming something of a notoriously unsuccessful one. And then a couple nights later, we did one of my favorite things at Outfest every year, which is Bad Movie Night. And this year we had, Drew Droege and Dave Holmes, as always, hosting. But we had Calpurnia Adams and Alexander Billings and Solomon Giorgio, who are all super funny. And we all watched Can't Stop the Music, which is one of the many nails in the coffin of Alan Carr's career. And it was really something to watch that movie with an audience of gay people projected on the big screen. It's terrible, but it is fascinating, and it is a weird time capsule of a time that never quite happened, which was the time where the 80s wound up being more 70s than the 70s were, mm-hmm. and the disco lived forever. So my DVD pick this week is Can't Stop the Music.
If you've never seen Can't Stop the Music, find a way to watch it that doesn't involve owning Can't Stop the Music.
I disagree.
Because you will, if you're a normal person, you'll want to watch this film one time and then pass it on to another unsuspecting person in your life.
I think of it
I don't think you'll want to watch it twice. I've seen it twice, and this is how I know.
I think of it like The Ring. Like, once you see it, you have to start showing it to other people.
And then you die.
Well, eventually we all do.
I have one bit of information to pass along to, again, Los Angeles people.
Uh-huh.
Let's say that it's Tuesday the 18th that you're listening to this show.
Of July?
Or before Tuesday, July 18th.
Okay.
That gives you time to go to the Downtown Independent and see the one-time-only screening of the new acclaimed Thai film called By the Time It Gets Dark. I'm just pushing people to go see this because I can't. I can't go because I'll be in Atlanta with dozens of Duraldes.
Eating delicious foods.
Damn this wonderful, loving, and supportive family for ruining my life.
Oh, boo-hoo.
Because I can't go see this movie. Director, her second feature, I'm about to butcher her name. It's taken me years to get it, to get to the place where I can say, a pitch-at-pong, we're a set the cool, in a way that doesn't sound like I'm wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to take me a while longer to figure out how to say this woman's name, Anocha Suwichakornpong.
Okay.
That is her name. I'm probably saying it wrong.
Probably.
This is her second feature. What's it about, you say? Well, I'll read you a two-sentence explanation from the AcropolisCinema.com website. The delicately poetic second feature by Thai director Anocha Suwichakornpong weaves together multiple stories and characters to create a portrait of a beautiful country haunted by the lingering trauma of the 1976 government-sanctioned massacre of student demonstrators in Bangkok. I hear it's a challenging and perhaps a little confusing film. This is my jam.
Is next level art bro Matt Severson seeing this?
I told him that he had to go because I can't go.
Okay.
And his response was, I do as you tell me. And that made me very happy because he's going to go. He's going to tell me about it. Also, I like being obeyed.
Yeah, well, enjoy it. I'm never doing it.
So eventually this will hit a DVD somewhere, somehow. Yes. In the remainder of 2017, and I'll finally get a chance to watch it. But this is your shot to see it in Los Angeles on a screen, one night only.
All right.
I'm happy to be going to Atlanta. I love the Duralde family. Why must they destroy everything I love?
Why don't you get mad at Acropolis for booking it while you're out of town?
I am mad at them, too.
Yeah, so yeah. There. All right, letters, please.
This is from Daniel. I enjoyed your discussion about Clue being a classic. I think some of my resistance is that a movie coming out when I was an adult being a classic makes me feel old.
Yeah, well, get used to it.
I also think the love of Clue is mostly from younger people, so we'll have to see if future generations continue that love. My issue is when people start calling these things masterpieces. Mm. This is something you and I discussed a little bit before the show. There are words that are in danger of losing their meanings. Classic and masterpiece are certainly among them. I would also put genius, legend, and icon in those categories. Often artists are declared geniuses on the basis of their first movie or record. I don't think that's good for the artist or for the concept of genius. I hear people being declared gay icons when I don't see that there is any reason to do so. But my biggest jaw-dropper was when Dogville came out, and an interviewer asked Lauren Bacall something like, how does it feel to be working with a legend like Nicole Kidman? Lauren effing Bacall. Her answer...
If withering glances could start fires...
Oh, yeah. Her answer created controversy, but the real subject should have been... The real subject should have been that was a really stupid thing to ask the woman who starred with Humphrey Bogart and became his wife, who was the star of How to Marry a Millionaire with Marilyn Monroe, who worked with Gary Cooper, Gregory Peck, Jimmy Stewart, Betty Grable, and many others, who worked with some of the greatest film directors of all times, and who herself is one of the legendary beauties of Hollywood and was given the sobriquet... Sobriquet?
Sobriquet.
Sobriquet. It's a word I read and never say out loud. Sobriquet, thank you. They called her The Look.
Yes.
Back in the day, Lauren Bacall. Anyway, I feel better now. Love the show, Daniel.
Thank you, Daniel.
Daniel, you're right.
Yeah.
You're totally right. How does it feel to be working with a legend like Nicole Kidman? I think Nicole Kidman is fantastic.
Yes, no shade on Nicole Kidman.
But she's not a legend yet.
No. And certainly not, it would never be one in the eyes of somebody like Lauren Bacall.
Lauren Bacall. This is from Reese. 5 years after sending my email to you all about damage control, it has finally entered into the Marvel Cinematic Universe via Spider-Man Homecoming. I was audibly excited when I saw this unfolding. Oh yeah, Spider-Man's great too. It's a John Hughes movie mixed with Marvel and a United Colors of Benetton ad. Finally, an actor that looks like a teenager and not an adult man pretending. Well, technically, he is an adult.
He's 20.
But he's an adult in the body of a very small person with a high-pitched voice. And so, yeah, he can play 15 really convincingly. And while I think the United Colors of Benetton ad is an amusing joke, I also want to say that, thank God, that it looks like that, because I was just having this conversation yesterday with a man I know who is not white. And I said, I just want to say this as a white person. I'm so fed up with movies being all white people all the time.
Especially when they're set in New York.
Especially when they're set in New York City. Yeah, or Los Angeles, or anywhere where, like, okay,
this
I get
isn't
it.
The Footloose remake, you know, where they're out in the middle of the Bible Belt somewhere.
I'm not talking about The Beguiled, which has its own set of circumstances and troubles. I'm also not talking about a film like, oh, say, anything set in a rural part of Minnesota, right?
Okay.
Where basically everybody's white. I'm talking about movies set in...
The modern day.
The modern day in a large urban center. Guess what? It ain't all white people. You could try to keep your world all white if you're a white person. You can try real hard, I guess. And maybe you'll accomplish it. I know some churches in Texas you can go to where you'll be just like everyone else in the room. But the minute you step outside, you're back in the world, and there are all kinds of people from all kinds of different races and ethnic backgrounds out there. And so that is, I'm so happy that Spider-Man Homecoming exists, and I want that to be the way things are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want it to be a thing that we can stop
and to be clear,
about.
To be clear, Reese, I'm not dogging you for saying no. United Colors of Benetton. That's funny.
Yeah, but this has been a conversation I've been seeing a lot about the whole question of diversity and blah, blah, blah. And it should be the standard. I don't even know why there's any point in questioning it.
You reminded me of something. Back in the day when I was a school teacher, I taught English as a second language. And I used to use the big Benetton ads.
Oh, funny.
In like Interview Magazine, the big magazines like that. I would cut them out and I would laminate them and label the parts of the face or the, you know, or the parts of the body. Mm. And I would use those Benetton ads specifically because they were so multiracial.
Huh. I'd love to see your, like, names of the colors lesson on that. And a crew, tangerine.
One day, a kid in the class, and where was this kid from? Most of my kids were from Mexico and Vietnam at the time that this incident took place. Later, as I moved on to a different school where it was all ESL, there were kids from like 16 different countries, and so it wasn't quite so binary and concentrated between Mexican kids and Vietnamese kids. I don't remember which kid said this, but there was a Benetton ad that showed... a white girl being kissed on the face, like on the cheek. Uh-huh. Like she's smiling all cute. And a black boy is kissing a white girl in the ad. And I laminated it, put it up, and I was like, this is the...
Lips, eyes.
Lips, eyes, yeah. And this one kid said, no good. And I was like, what? He's like, no good. And I was like, I don't understand. And he actually said, black and white, no good. And I was like, excuse me. Yes, good.
Welcome to Texas.
Yeah. Fascinating. That day was so... And the kid stopped talking. Hmm. Like, because, you know, the kid had very limited English skills.
Sure.
At that time. He'd been
he wasn't
going to
get into a debate with
he wasn't going to get into a debate with me about anything. And the class was taught in English, and I didn't speak Vietnamese. I didn't speak Spanish at the time. I still don't speak Spanish, but I sure did learn a lot of it while I was an ESL teacher. I would bring home words to you, and you'd say, I have no idea what that is, because Spain's Spanish is radically different. Anyway, that was an interesting day. And for a minute, I thought the kid was mad at me, like for disagreeing with him and telling him, no, I'm the adult in the room and I'm telling you, you're wrong. Mm. Yeah, I wish I knew where that kid was today.
Fascinating.
That kid's like 40 now.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was very young. I was 26 and the kid's like 13.
Obviously, this took place a while ago if it involved United Colors of Benetton.
Yeah. This was 1991.
Yeah.
I'm 100,000 years old. I sing the body electric.
Carry on.
More letters. Oh, I like the subject line of this one. The subject line is, Alonzo is right. Dave is right.
Sure. Why all the time?
This is from Gareth. I'm listening to the recent episode with Manola. Yes, Dave, you are right about the Turin horse. Yes, Alonzo, I saw it because of Dave's review. One of many Dave reviews I continue to quote to this day, even if I only read the review once. P.S. For Alonzo, although I passionately adore Baby Driver, I think most of your criticisms are valid.
Oh, well, thank you.
Some of them I never would have noticed on my own, but I understand them, and they are fair. So I'm happy to get a different perspective on it.
Well, thank you, Gareth. Yeah, I really thought I was going to be, you know, the cheese stands alone on not liking Baby Driver, but it's been interesting to see the breadth of reactions to it.
This is from Uncle Rusty.
Okay.
Who is neither one of our uncles.
No.
But still, he is Uncle Rusty. He has written in before.
Because he says
and
so.
And he's the only person who listens to this show who wants to be referred to as Uncle Rusty.
And so he shall.
And so we shall call him Uncle Rusty. I love you guys and Manola, but...
No, there's always a but.
I wanted to put the kibosh on any notion... only briefly mentioned in the podcast, that stat nerds in baseball are similar to the ass clowns on film Twitter and elsewhere who obsessively quote box office figures and meta cinema scores. The former is interested only in deepening the understanding and appreciation of the game of baseball. The latter is, I actually don't know what they are, to be honest. More specifically, to the point, I would say that critics such as your collective selves are far more comparable to the baseball nerds, in that the best of you are interested in mining the mysteries of their obsessions. The others are just sad people.
Oh.
That is all. Uncle Rusty, you know what? He's right.
Hot take, Uncle Rusty.
He's right. You're right, Uncle Rusty. I misspoke because I don't know very many baseball stat nerds. I mean, I do know them. I know a couple.
You never have conversations with them
about that. But I don't have conversations with them about that. And I don't resent them for it. And they are never obnoxious about it. Whereas the film Twitter dudes, and they are always dudes, they're obnoxious. So you're right. We misspoke.
We take it back.
We take it back about the baseball nerds.
Yes.
No, not about the
film. The film stat nerds.
Not about the ass clowns on film Twitter.
They still
okay. Yes. Steve says, "I didn't read any reviews going into Baby Driver. I only knew that everyone thought it was all kinds of awesome, so I sat there in a darkened theater waiting for the awesome to wash over me. It did not. Surely there must be something wrong with me, but it was good to know from Alonzo's review that I was not alone."
Huh. Well, awesome. Thank you, Steve.
"While it gives me great comfort to know that Alonzo is on the same island as me, it should give Alonzo no comfort to know that I'm one of the outliers on his island of Baby Driver skeptics. Sorry, dude."
It's a big island. There's room for all kinds of opinions.
It's an island of spiders. Paul says, "I loved that you chatted up the Long Good Friday with Bob Hoskins. I saw that about 20 years ago when I worked at a local Seattle video store, Island Video. The key scene for me is the very last one. Oh, yes. With no less than Pierce Brosnan holding the gun to Hoskins' face. And it's great, stunning, totally silent acting from Hoskins. What a movie." You're right. All y'all, watch The Long Good Friday. It's so good.
It's been a while since I've seen it. I need to dig that one back out. Hang on.
Letter from Jesse.
Okay.
"It's interesting Alonzo should have mentioned and put the question out there to us straight cis women about laughter at a screening of Brokeback Mountain, because I, a straight cis woman, had a very different experience in the screening I attended. My friend Kate and I went to the Landmark Century Center in Chicago on opening weekend. That theater is just a click down the way from the Boys Town neighborhood of Chicago, where the predominant population is gay men. I had read the It's not Prulx.
No.
I've never had to pronounce her name
Diana,
out loud.
Diana Osana says Annie Prue. So I
Prue?
Mm-hmm.
You don't even pronounce the L or the X.
Nope.
And you don't make L and X into some other sound.
Mm-mm.
It's not Prulx. It's not Prush.
No.
It's Prue.
Prue.
Prue. I'll start that sentence over. I had read the Prue story prior to attending and had already cried several times before that reunion scene. No laughter from this gal. And when the scene cuts from Ennis and Jack's passionate reunion to Alma and Michelle Williams' shocked expression, the theater, mostly men, and I'm assuming mostly Boys Town residents, burst into raucous laughter."
You know, I've heard a lot of different anecdotes about that moment and when people saw it in theaters. Part of me thinks that there is something about that scene that is kind of set up like a French bedroom farce.
Okay.
You have like the couple secretly having an assignation and the wife like catching them, but they don't know it. And so like dramatically we have been conditioned to think of that moment as a funny moment.
You might have a point there. You might be onto something.
Just a thought.
But then, she continues, "The world contains multitudes."
Oh, absolutely.
"In closing, I was glad to hear the recent review of Baby Driver. Much like Alonzo, I went into my viewing with high hopes. Much like Dave, I'd say that out of the five Wright movies, it was my least favorite. I'm a Hot Fuzz girl.
Mm.
And I was puzzled by my own ambivalence. It was comforting to hear something other than the juicy red tomato reviews that are floating around. You guys are swell. Yours in sweaty boner danger.
Woo!
Jesse.
Thank you, Jesse. So, some sad news to report that's actually breaking as we were taping this.
Yes.
George Romero has passed away.
And my microphone has stopped giving me anything.
What are you talking about?
I can't hear myself. How am I looking on the board?
Again, do you have your... Are your earphones on?
Oh, they got turned down somehow.
Your microphone. Your microphone is not attached to your ear holes. 7 years of podcasting later.
Sometimes I get confused and lost in the woods.
By bright lights.
Yeah.
Yeah, so George Romero passed away.
He was 77.
Yes.
Yes.
One of the most influential American independent filmmakers ever.
Everything about horror that we know now is because of him.
Yeah.
He changed it all.
Before George Romero, zombies were like, you know, this sort of tropical voodoo thing that you would see like in a Jacques Tourneur movie.
Yes, that is correct.
He kind of created the whole sort of shuffling, brain-eating, Walking Dead thing that it remains so pervasive in the culture. I should turn the fan off, shouldn't I?
More than that, just the style of Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead. Those films, the formal qualities of those films, cheap and dirty and like you're not getting out of this alive sort of situation.
And the satiric underpinnings, should be noted.
So, you know, this is a loss. He was 77. I don't know what got him at 77. This just happened.
Yeah.
I mean, this is breaking as we talk right now.
And I should say, he has also made some non-zombie films that are worth checking out. The original The Crazies.
Yes. The Crazies is so good.
Martin. I'm a fan of Monkey Shines. I've always kind of liked
that. Sure. Okay. I'm not going to sit here and tell you you're wrong on the day the man has passed away.
I would say even that I liked Monkey Shines better than some of the later Romero Dead movies. I think some of the last ones were maybe not up to par with the original creation, but, you know. Nonetheless, important body of work, definitely had a lasting impact on the culture.
Important filmmaker of the 20th century.
No question.
Yes.
Pittsburgh's finest.
Yes. And Twitter's already got jokes.
Well, of course.
So if you want to see those, you can go there. If you don't like to do that on the day that that person actually dies, you can wait. That's what I like to do.
Well, you know, look, this is a guy who much of his film, his oeuvre, was about The Walking Dead. So, you know, when he dies.
Right. It's inevitable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we're done with this.
Mm-hmm.
But guess what happens now?
What, Dave?
TV.
A podcast of the television.
So, this is part of our
summer
super splash.
Super splash.
Did I start with super summer splash or summer super splash?
That was so long ago, I don't even remember. It's just
we got to remember, though, because we got to sell this the proper way.
We're keeping it splashtacular, whatever it is.
I want to know.
We should explain what's happening here for people who are not subscribers.
Maybe this is your first time listening to Linoleum Knife, and now you're wondering why we've started the theme song over again and talking about TV. Here's what happens. Linoleum Knife is a podcast of the cinema. It's free, and it's always free.
Yes.
It's been free for the past 6.5 years, and it's going to stay free.
Mm-hmm.
But a year and a half ago, we got on the Patreon. And we decided that people, if they wanted to, they could pay us money, subscription-like, once a month.
And we'd do things.
And we'd do extra shows. And so we started a podcast called LKTV, which is a short leap from film criticism to television criticism. Both you and I have written about TV as a secondary sort of thing.
Absolutely. And I do recaps.
Basically, our entire writing careers, pretty much, off and on, here and there.
Yeah, I mean, not so all much through really. I had a writing career before there was an internet, and back then I was pretty strictly film.
But when I started, I was already like into the TV writing and, you know, doing the TV Without Pity style recapping for The Advocate of reality shows and, you know, stuff like that. And then I had a column in The Advocate that was kind of a template for this very podcast, where I just touched on a lot of different TV stuff. It was all queer specific. But
I don't remember this.
You don't?
I remember your column, The White Party.
Remember the time that I quit writing for The Advocate because they became owned by new terrible people who decided they weren't going to pay me? Remember that?
That part I remember.
Well, the thing that they weren't paying me for was that TV column.
Oh, I thought it was like for runway recaps.
No, remember how they owed me $3,000?
Oh, I remember.
And I said, I'm not going to write for you until you give me some money. And they said, well, maybe you shouldn't write for us anymore. Mm-hmm. Just one guy, the big boss, actually, the new big boss, actually said that to me. And I said, you know what? You can go F yourself, and I'm going to get that money.
And then you said, until you do right by me, everything you even think about is going to fail.
No, that's not what I did. I mean, that's funny and all, but actually, I became a repo man.
Yes.
And I spent the next year harassing them.
Where's my money?
In a consistent...
professional.
A consistent professional way. Each week, I would say, hello, you owe me X amount of money.
When can I expect to receive?
When can I expect to receive that check? And then they'd send me a little bit. Like there was one woman, a secretary, who didn't get the message and kept answering the phone. Like all you had to do was put me to voicemail and ignore me for a year.
When you have creditors hounding you, you
don't pick up the phone. No, she kept picking up the phone. And like she got to know me by name.
I'm sure she did.
And
you were repoing for both of us because they owed both of us money.
Every week, I'd say, I need that. When am I getting that money? I didn't threaten or anything. No. I wasn't like a mean repo man.
No.
I was just like, when can I expect that check? And it took a year of little checks to get all $3,000.
Yes.
But I got my money.
That's right.
Anyway, that was the TV column. Do you not remember even reading that TV column?
I remember your recaps of Idol and Runway and stuff. I don't remember you writing a TV column, but I believe you. I'm sure it happened.
I'm glad that my work was so meaningful to you that you don't even remember that I was doing it.
What we're saying is we are qualified.
We're fairly qualified.
About television.
Yeah.
We may not be certified, but we are qualified.
We're certified fresh.
Oh, well, yeah. With a red juicy tomato.
But with a red juicy tomato and not a green splat.
Nope.
No. So the breaking news of the moment is Doctor Who.
Or as Dorothy Kilgallen might have put it back in the day on What's My Line, are you a Lady Time Lord?
Yes. Or Lady Doctor. Yeah.
Well, the Doctor is a Time Lord. You've never even... Do you watch this show?
I don't know nothing about nothing...
I mean, I'm a come lately on this show, but I still got you beat on this.
You do. I don't look at it. Well, I do look at it. I walk through the TV. I walk through the living room while you're watching it for What the Flick.
Yes. And I had never seen it before. And when the Capaldi started as the Doctor, they were like, hey, let's do What the Flick recaps. And we'll have, you know, Bibbs and originally Jenna Bush, now Meredith Placco, who know the show really well and know the backstory. And you can hop in as, like, guy who's just getting started and, you know, blah, blah, blah.
So, you're the fresh one.
Yeah. So every week I'm like, okay, explain this. Explain this thing that is obviously a thing and a reference to something that I'm supposed to know and I don't know. Explain it. So this is my first regeneration because Capaldi is my first Doctor. But the show, you know, it's been on for 50 plus years, and
yes.
This is like what, the 13th Doctor, and
I don't know.
I believe she's the 13th, and so you know there is a regeneration when they change performers, and up until now they've all been white dudes, and now Doctor Who is a white lady. And it used to be that if you refer to the character as Doctor Who, that the hardcore nerds would get on your butt about it because
would they?
Yes, because in the show the character is just referred to as the Doctor.
Yes.
However, in the last couple episodes, it was revealed by Missy that his real name all along has been Doctor Who.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, may be one of those things that only exists in certain universes or parallel whatever. But you can now call that character Doctor Who and not have some nerd get all over you about it. So, ha-ha!
Ha-ha, nerds.
Doctor Who it is.
You know what? You know what is a good thing about my life?
That you don't know any of this.
The nerds, no. Nerds don't come for me.
That's nice.
I can fairly do and say what I want on the internet.
Not even like indie music nerds?
Nope. Hmm. Nerds don't come for me.
All right.
And I'm not sure why. But they don't give me the same kind of disrespect and attacking behavior that I see even you getting from them from time to time.
Why don't you come do some Twin Peaks recaps on What the Flick and see how that goes?
You know, I've done my fair share of substituting for you on What the Flick. I assume I'll be doing it again at the end of the summer when you go off to the Venice Film Festival.
No, that's true. I guess you will, yes.
And I am very much like what we discussed earlier, my bubble of non-participation in trailers and anticipatory film information.
It's always stunning to me how you do that, because like I have been not clicking on anything about D23,
right?
But I know way more than I want to know about like the Avengers Infinity War trailer.
I need to know exactly what D23 is.
D23 is a thing that Disney's been doing for a while now. It's sort of their Comic-Con. That's all about their own properties and their stuff. Our friend Jeffrey
Epstein. So it's like an Avon meeting.
Sort of. But it's
like when you go to the Avon lady's house and she says, here are the new products coming out from Avon for fall.
Basically, yes. Here is the men's, here's the aftershave.
Shampoo in a glass Snoopy bottle.
Here's an aftershave in a bottle that looks like an old-timey Model T.
Right.
No,
so this is Avon. Old-timey Avon. Yes. You go to the Avon lady's house.
Yes.
She doesn't come to you. You go to her house, and she has it all out on the table.
Our pal Jeffrey Epstein, who was at Out Magazine when I was at The Advocate, and who now has worked for Disney for quite a while.
Yes.
I think this is, if he didn't start it, he certainly has been one of its prime movers for a while.
I see.
And when it started, it was strictly like Disney, Disney, Disney. But of course now, Disney, you know, who runs the world? Disney.
Yeah.
You know,
they run a lot of things.
It's like we're going to tell you about Star Wars. We're going to tell you about all the Marvel movies. We're going to tell you about Wrinkle in Time. And
this sounds really great.
Well, and they're basically biting Comic-Con's rhyme.
Okay,
Comic-Con is this next weekend while we're in Atlanta.
Yeah.
So, but all the really juicy, you know, nerd news has been coming out of D23. So anyway, I'm not clicking on stuff, and I'm not looking at trailers. I don't want to see the Last Jedi posters. I'm not interested in any of that stuff. And yet,
let's clarify. We are interested in
the
cultural products when they
come out,
make themselves available to us.
We're not interested in the marketing materials that lead us there.
No.
But even trying to avoid that stuff, again, my feed on Facebook or going to the Raps homepage
or
looking at Twitter, I know about, you know, this character meets that character in the Avengers Infinity War trailer.
Nope, I don't know anything.
This is going to happen in Mary Poppins, and that's going to be on the Last Jedi poster. Like,
oh, you know what's going to happen in Mary Poppins. She's going to get poppin'. That's what's going to happen in Mary Poppins.
But will she be locking?
Yes.
Okay.
It's Emily Blunt.
In that case, yes.
Well, you know, dear husband, I don't know the answer. I don't know how to tell you. All I know is that I have a really good, highly functioning ignorometer.
Well, you should give courses in bubble, because I don't know how you do it.
And I'm not, I don't want to know the D23 things, because I want to know, I want to participate in culture. I don't want to be, you know, an obedient consumer.
Yes. And you know what? You know what I like?
Mm.
Surprise.
Yeah, that too.
I like my favorite thing, and it happens so rarely, is to walk into a movie and not know anything about it. And it happens.
Well, that's what I did with The Endless Poetry. I didn't know it was a sequel.
Yeah, there you go. But like, I still remember, you know, I had missed all the screenings for Short Term 12. And didn't even really look at the screen notices that well. And I think somehow I thought it was a compilation of shorts. Like, I thought it was 12 shorts, and they gave it sort of like this, you know, classy title.
Here we have an omnibus.
It was something like that,
for you. And then cinephile.
Our friend Joe was visiting from Chicago, and he wanted to go to a movie. And it was like the one thing I hadn't seen at the Arc. And I'm like, all right, let's go see this thing.
And I was asleep or whatever. I don't know where I was. Forget.
And it was great, and I loved it. But it was just like, oh, I have no idea what this is about or where this is going. Which character is going to be the protagonist? Like, it took me a while to find that out, you know. But that's so the exception. For the most part, I have to go into every movie with some baseline level of knowledge or understanding, and then hope for along the way that surprised me. But we're supposed to be talking about television.
We started talking about television with the Doctor.
Doctor Who's a lady. That's awesome. There are the, I'm sure, inevitable crybabies on the internet.
The same half dozen dudes who are pissed off about that.
Of course.
And because no one loved them enough, I guess.
Because big feminism has the power to make corporations bend to their will over the fact that nobody wants to see that.
Right.
Shut up.
Right. It's men got to cry about something. The world teaches them not to cry about things, so they have to cry about their favorite television shows.
Somebody I know told me they are working on developing a beer that is called White Tears.
Great. We've done free episodes of LKTV before.
We have. We started it as a freebie. First one's always free. Loss leader.
Entice you guys into subscribing.
And we've tossed a few occasionally out there.
Since Patreon came along, we've still tossed out a few freebies. But this particular episode of LKTV is going to be a little different, and that is because Outfest.
True.
You are at the end of your tether.
It is true. Welcome to my last nerve.
You are very tired, and you have not watched. This isn't right. You have watched television this week, but it's been in a semi-catatonic state, in between running off to this or that film festival venue.
Yes.
To host a screening, introduce a screening, conduct a Q&A. And so when you have been home for the past 7 days, no, for the past ten days, you have been tormenting me with the following activity. You sit on the couch with your phone in hand while you play some dumb game that goes boing, boing, boing. Mm-hmm. And then you have like a cookie in your other hand that I have made that we will be talking about, not in this show, but soon. And you are watching the Hallmark Movies and Mysteries, or whatever the hell the channel is called, Christmas in July films that I can't... I can't. And it's not that I don't want to watch the Hallmark movies about Christmas, which, let's be real, I don't want to watch them, even in December. But I especially do not want to watch them in July. But you keep doing it. You watch them in like 15, 20-minute chunks, and I don't know if it's the same movie over and over, or if it's an extremely long movie with different people playing different, like if it's like it's like Todd Solondz's palindromes, where like seven people play the same small town lady in need of the love of a good man. Tell me about the ones that you've been sort of comfort food watching this week. And keep it very brief because I don't care. And I don't think anyone else does either. But this is the opportunity for you to tell us what you have been watching on TV this week before I get to the actual shows that we are going to discuss in a very one-sided way.
I do want to say, I have also been watching the Rachel Maddow show. I am trying to keep up with all the craziness. But I have to say, after a stressful day, there is nothing more relaxing than one of these stupid Hallmark Christmas movies.
No, you know what's relaxing after a stressful day? Dinner. A shower.
Dave, you
And some kind of sex. Like, whether it's with a person or it's just masturbating, whatever. Then you can just go to sleep. Your day is complete.
You do you.
Yeah.
As it were. Let me have this.
Yes.
So here's what I watched this week.
All right.
There was Hearts of Christmas, which is the one about the hospital neonatal intensive care unit.
More like Farts of Christmas, am I right?
And attractive new accountant comes in and he wants to like slash the budget, which means forcing early retirement on a bunch of people, including Sharon Lawrence, the dedicated nurse who runs the department. The younger nurse who finds herself falling in love with the accountant, even though she's really mad at him for doing all the layoffs, decides to throw one last big Christmas party for the Sharon Lawrence character to so everybody can show her how appreciated she is and blah, blah, blah. Sharon Lawrence has a little cute little dog in that movie, and I swear the exact same cute little dog also appears in A Christmas to Remember, which is the one where Mira Sorvino is this like Martha Stewart type who goes to Colorado for Christmas and gets into a car accident and then has amnesia and then winds up getting taken care of by the hunky veterinarian who is also the cop from the Murder, She Baked movies, who is still grieving the loss of his wife and raising their three children. And Amnesia Mira Sorvino, of course, falls in love with him and the kids. And despite the fact that she's on television, nobody in this snowed-in town in Colorado recognizes her from a can of paint.
So it's like if Martha Stewart had amnesia and no one knew who she was and couldn't tell her.
Right.
Okay.
And then I'm most
Poor
of the way...
Poor Mira Sorvino, the winner of an Academy Award.
Yes. Well, work is work.
Yeah.
And I'm most of the way through Debbie McComber's Dashing Through the Snow. Debbie McComber is the William Faulkner of the Hallmark Christmas movie. She knows her stuff. This is about an adorably perky craftsperson who is on a road trip to Seattle to see her mother for Christmas.
She gets in a car accident. She has amnesia.
No. She's on the no-fly list, and she winds up sharing a rental car with
a
hunky Afghanistan veteran. Well, it turns out, through a wacky bit of misunderstanding, the year previous, her purse had been stolen, her identity was stolen, they got into her computer, and somehow whatever those people did made her look like a terrorist. So she's being pursued by the FBI, even though like she's the most innocuous, cutesy-poo, Santa-loving woman imaginable.
Everybody loves Santa.
Yeah, well, she really loves Santa.
Remember that time
really liked Santa.
Like, in the way that I like Santa?
No, like the kid in A Christmas Story.
Oh, okay.
That's something else entirely.
Sock it to me, Santa. Remember that time that we were coming back from visiting the Spain part of your family in actual Spain?
Yes.
And when we got back to LAX and they held me in customs because they thought I was a terrorist?
Yes.
They thought I was with the Irish Republican Army.
Right. You were a different gun-running Dave White. And you not a ham-running Dave
because
White.
Because Dave White is such a unique name. My entire life has been like this.
Yes. Creditors call you.
And now... And now I've been mistaken for an IRA terrorist. Granted, this happened 11 years ago. Perhaps in the past 11 years, they caught that
David White
man and, you know, brought him to justice. But I ain't the one. I was so angry. And you stood there and you said to me, calm down. Stop getting angry. Calm down. Stop getting angry. Calm down. Stop getting angry. It's going to go better for you if you're not angry. You need to calm down, Dave White. Stop it.
Yeah.
And that helped a little bit.
Yeah, Homeland Security does not care that you're fussy after a long flight.
I was quite fussy.
You were very fussy.
I was fussy. I was a fuss budget.
Uh-huh. They don't have a line in their budget for your fuss budgetry. And I'm like, they're going to take you to Gitmo. You dig, breathe, and calm down, or we're going to get through this.
Okay, regarding the dog that you've seen twice, that is Canada's most well-regarded animal actor.
He's the Helen Shaver of canines.
That's the only story I want to know about that dog, because otherwise it's some Milo and Otis stuff. And you really don't want to know about that.
No. Just do,
hey, y'all.
Don't.
You want to ruin your day?
Don't Google this.
Google Milo and Otis.
Please don't. Don't.
You will not like what you find.
Mm-mm. Don't do it.
It's a bad news situation.
Both of these movies were made in 2016, so I could totally imagine him being like done with one. Like, hey, we could use a cute dog for the Mira Sorvino Has Amnesia movie. Oh, no problem. It's down the street here in Vancouver.
Yeah.
It's amazing how some of these movies do not try to hide the Canadian accents.
No.
Like, I even heard, like...
I'm sorry.
Yeah. In Dashing Through the Snow, at one point, she's in the airport, and somebody walks by and talks about the lineup. Look at that lineup. Lineup is a thing that Canadians say when they're talking about a line. Like, if there's a line at the bank, they say it's a lineup.
In England, they call it a queue.
Yes, they do. We only say Q for Netflix, but
right.
Yeah, the lineup, that's that, and I learned that from Kids in the Hall reruns.
Oh.
That's where the flying pig would go, wherever there was a lineup.
I didn't know y'all called it a lineup.
Mm-hmm.
A lineup in the United States is like a roster of people.
Yeah.
Like a list of human beings or things or...
Or like, you know, in the when they put all the criminals, you know, in a row and you're behind on the other side of the glass.
Yeah. Okay, can we be done talking about these infernal Christmas movies? Because here's what you've actually accomplished.
Oh, we're not done.
No, I know. And here's what you've actually accomplished. You've made me wish that I had never said yes to the thing that we're about to do. Why don't you tell people?
We're about to do a very exciting crossover with our friends Bibbs and Whitney.
I don't know that I would call it very exciting anymore.
For me, it is.
Okay.
We're doing a crossover with Bibbs and Whitney of the Cancel Too Soon podcast. They also have a Patreon page, and they also have exclusive content for their Patreon subscribers. So we are doing a crossover two-part episode that will only be available on to our respective Patreon subscribers. And they are about the two new Christmas movies that are airing on Hallmark and Hallmark Movies and Mysteries this month. One of them is called The Cure for Christmas. The other one is called Home for Christmas Day. And we are going to be reviewing them. And if you want to hear them, you've got to subscribe to both shows.
I don't think anyone is enticed.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not now. Maybe in December they will be. It's part of the holiday rush.
Here's my plan for this situation. First of all, I'm going to make that Christina Tosi Ritz crackers and grape jelly icebox cake.
Okay. Well, yeah, somebody wrote in and suggested that. It's one of the letters.
Although I'm doing it my own way, which I'll explain later.
Okay.
I have my own version of this, but she inspired me to make it. And, oh, man, is it good.
And it's an icebox cake.
And it's an icebox cake. So no oven at all. It's perfect for the summertime.
It's a stovetop cake.
The other thing I'm going to do is be a complete fuss budget.
Great.
So y'all get ready for that.
You're not going to feel the spirit of Christmas.
I am not.
Jingle bells.
No, stop it. Quit it.
All right. So while I've been off traipsing about working and then coming home and collapsing in front of movies you hate, what have you been watching this week, Dave White?
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. I put that in TiVo because I am a fan of Andrea Savage.
As am I. I didn't really know I was a fan of her until I saw The House. Now, she's been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I've known her face longer than I've known her name.
Yeah, her face pops up, and I see, and she'll be funny for a minute, and then she goes away. Because it's all small stuff that she does in other people's shows.
I think of her as funny Amy Landecker. Not that Amy Landecker isn't funny.
All right.
But I think the two of them, like, they could play sisters.
Okay. Sure. I don't know if I know who Amy Landecker is.
Well, because you don't watch Transparent.
Okay.
She was the sexy neighbor in A Serious Man.
Oh, all right. Okay. Yes, her.
Her.
Well, in the house, she was one of a pair of brawling neighborhood moms.
Yes.
The funniest people in the film, for me.
Yeah, no, definitely.
They were the funniest people in the film.
They were scene stealers. It was her and Logan Lerman.
Logan Lerman did not play a housewife.
Lauren Lapham,
something like that.
Lex Luthor, Lucy
yes,
Lawless.
Yes, Lucy Lawless and Lex Luthor. And Lucy Liu, in fact. Mm-hmm. All of those people are that same person. Where am I anymore now? All right. So Andrea Savage created a show called I'm Sorry, a sitcom.
Yes.
It stars her and Tom Everett Scott.
Oh.
And Jason Mantzoukas, who was in the house. And Judy Greer.
Oh, my God.
Is on this show.
Oh, I got to watch this.
Well, I hope you do. Because I don't think I'm going to watch it anymore.
Oh, no.
Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just feeling my fuss budgetness.
Mm-hmm. I keep begging you to get an air conditioner in here.
But it did not make me laugh.
Oh, no.
Listen, it might make you laugh. Okay. It might just be one of those situations where it's a sitcom and it's taking its time to figure itself out.
Right,
and get to know where it's going to go and find its rhythm and... Yeah. But at the moment, it reminds me quite a bit of The League.
Okay, well,
Well, as do I. I thought The League was a very, very funny show.
Yeah.
But the same kind of tone, the same sort of...
Mean-spirited.
Smart-ass suburbanites who have been created in the wake of the Seinfeld universe where... People who have plenty are still jerks.
and want more and
can't stop behaving like little Larry Davids, mm-hmm. You know? So, I just, you know, I want... In the episode I watched,
mm-hmm.
She discovers that one of the moms in the neighborhood... used to be a porn star, the world's most famous anal porn star. In fact, she was an AVN winner years in a row. And so this makes everyone stare at her butt all the time because the gossip, you know, spreads quickly. And they all, you know, get into weird little scrapes with her that all involve, you know, the butt. And
it is for love reasons.
Listen. You know me. I love butts. And I am in agreement with our guest from a few episodes back, Johnny Jungle Guts, when he said that the butt is for love reasons.
Mm.
So I'm down for a lot of crass jokes about the butt and about anal sex and about poop. And you know everything. You know,
This sounds very in your wheelhouse.
And I just wasn't.
Huh. All right. Well, I'll give it a shot.
I would like it if you would watch all of the episodes that are happening in TiVo right now, because there's like three or four or five of them at this point.
Lordy, okay.
And you tell me once you catch up. Is it something you can put in your phone and watch over the time we're in Atlanta?
I don't think so.
What are you putting in your phone while we're in Atlanta to watch?
Well, I can put Netflix stuff in my phone.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So I'm thinking I'm going to put in Glow, because we still haven't gotten to
that.
Oh,
good, yes.
I'm going to put in Friends from College, because I'm hoping that might be good.
All right, maybe it doesn't look all that interesting to me. But...
And here's how busy I've been with Outfest. There's a new season of Degrassi.
I know.
And I haven't seen a second of it because I just have been so exhausted that all I can do with my synapses is Rachel or Hallmark. So that's what's going on my phone.
But I did also watch episode 1 of Claus.
Oh, finally, a show about Santa.
No, you stop with that.
Oh, sorry. Oh, the other
because one. You, yes. It'll be like Beetlejuice. You'll say it three times, and some executive will be like, let's do a dark and gritty show about Santa Claus.
No.
You know that's what'll happen.
Ugh, no thank you.
Yeah. How much you bet that's what's... It's already in someone's development
wheel.
Oh,
I'm sure, yeah. Or there's like, you know, or a wacky family sitcom about what the Krampus does the rest of the year.
Right.
One of those two things.
Yeah.
Yes, no. Claus is the Niecy Nash TNT show.
It's on TNT.
About a nail salon.
It's like Steel Magnolias and Breaking Bad and Spring Breakers and I don't know what else.
Wow, okay.
All together.
Barbershop?
No.
Okay.
No. Because Barbershop is, let's be real, Barbershop movies are corny.
Yeah, pretty much.
And this is not corny. This show is not corny.
Now,
this show is great.
This was my impression from the trailer that I kept seeing at AMC First Look.
I sure do like this one.
Tell me if I got this right. My impression is this is a nail salon that mainly exists to launder money for like some bad hombres, and Niecy Nash wants out, and she wants to go legit. Is that what the show's about?
Here's what it's about.
Okay.
Niecy Nash is the boss of a nail salon who gets involved with a guy named Roller. I think what I need to do is explain this first episode to you.
Okay.
Because in spite of the fact that there's a piece of information that takes place at the end that could be considered a spoiler, I'm actually thinking of it as an enticement.
All right,
well, like, it's why you need to watch.
Well, it's at the end of the first episode. It's at best, a cliffhanger.
So I'm going to tell you pretty much everything that happens in this episode.
Okay.
And don't get mad at me because of it. Niecy Nash, please.
He means you, listener.
Not you. Not you, Alonzo Duralde, you, the listeners. Because, again, I'm hooked.
Okay.
I'm going in with this one.
All right.
Niecy Nash runs a nail salon. She gets involved with a guy named Roller. And they have sex a lot. You don't really know why they're together, but you do within about 10 minutes.
I see.
Working in the nail salon with her is Carrie Preston, as a woman named Polly, who is a mousy, sort of suburban-y looking housewife lady who has fallen from a high place and has been in prison for identity theft and is now out with an ankle bracelet. And so
this is like her parole job.
And no, she was working there before she went into prison.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
But she's sweet and very Kimmy Schmidt-ish in that way.
Naif.
Then there's Judy Reyes as a character named Quiet Anne, who doesn't speak.
Okay.
But who is a swaggering, stone, butch, lesbian, and a... Remember Poppy on the L Word and what a Mac Poppy was?
Oh, yeah.
That's Quiet Anne.
Okay.
All right. She is Poppy and Shane and, lesbian folk singer Frank all in one.
Nice.
Like, come here, baby. Come here, girl. That kind of, like, it's for real.
Stone Butch sex machine.
Yeah. Then there is... Jen Lyon, an actress I do not know before now, but she plays the sort of brassy white lady.
Okay.
You know, that's darling.
Big Texan kind
of. Yeah, yeah.
This is set in Miami?
It's set in Florida. Near the ocean. I don't know if it's Miami or,
Vero Beach.
And then there's Karrueche Tran, who up to this point has been known mostly for her relationship with Chris Brown.
Okay.
And currently for her restraining order against Chris Brown.
So she's a Wendy Williams staple.
She is. I learned about her.
She's a walking hot topic.
Back in the day. And she plays the girl that they hired to take the place of Polly
while she was in prison.
But now they're trying to boot her out the door because she's kind of a pain. She's young and bratty and kind of a dirtbag. But she, you know, she's got a lot of attitude. It turns out that Niecy and Roller are involved in money laundering for an OxyContin dealer. And the big boss is Dean Norris.
Oh, well then.
And he plays a character named Uncle Daddy.
Not to be confused with Uncle Grandpa.
And he is gay.
Oh my.
Yeah. And so the nail salon is money laundering this drug operation that works out of a clinic, a rejuvenation clinic. A woman walks into the rejuvenation clinic and says, I got pain in my titties. And the doctor's just like, here's some Oxy. Yeah. And that's literally every person who walks in. Pain in this. And then Oxy.
Here's your pills. Here are your opioids.
Yeah. The reason that Niecy wants to launder this money and is doing this is because she has been promised $20,000 bonus at the end of the year for her efforts. Mm-hmm. She's been getting paid all year long and is getting $20,000 at the end. She wants to open her own nail salon, a fancier one, a nicer location, a bigger, better, classier place. And then Uncle Daddy does not give her the money.
Ooh.
And the deal she had with Roller is up because it's New Year's Day. Mm-hmm. And Roller tells her, No, you're not getting all your money. You work for me. Do as you're told. Oh, and by the way, I'm now going to have sex with Karrueche Tran instead of you, so goodbye. But you still work for me. Mm-hmm. I own you. Also, get rid of Polly because she's got that ankle monitor and we don't want any law, you know, people near this operation. And so,
out come the claws.
Yes. Niecy goes to his giant glass-walled home.
Uncle Daddy's.
No, Roller.
Roller's, oh. Okay.
Yeah. To give him a pubic manscape.
Okay.
And then an eyebrow threading.
He hires her to do this after breaking up with her?
Uh-huh, because he owns her, you see.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, he owns her now in this situation. He's not a good person.
No.
He's real hot, but he's not a good person.
No, it's not. I would not want somebody waxing my sensitive areas if I have done them wrong.
He thinks that he's got her under his thumb.
I see, gotcha.
So she smashes his head in and pushes him in the pool. Which does not kill him. Karrueche Tran kills him.
Oh!
Shoots him dead. Because when she walks in, when Niecy walks in to the house to do the eyebrow threading, he's basically raping Karrueche Tran. Because she's like, no, stop it. I don't want to do this anymore. And he's like, you're going to do this. I'm teaching you things and stuff like that.
Ugh. By the way, did you read April Wolf's?
I have not read that April Wolf article yet, okay. But I'm interested in that. An article about rape choreography in TV and films.
Yes.
Yeah.
In the LA Weekly.
And so the show ends, that episode ends with them murdering him.
So that's the inciting incident.
Yes.
Ooh.
And I'm, everything about this show, the style, the trashiness of the production design,
they're leaning into Florida, I think.
Oh, my. In all the ways that you can think of Florida. This show is giving you all the ways that you can think of Florida. I am in love, and I will keep going with this. And they got a second season pickup already.
Wow.
And they're on episode like 6 or 7 now. So I've got a little catching up to do. But
okay.
It's so much fun. Just episode 1 is in TiVo. So I guess it's streaming somewhere else.
Okay. I'll find it.
What else I got?
What else you got?
I know, because poor Mr. Outfest. I took a bullet and watched an episode of Impractical Jokers. What a terrible show that is.
I don't even...
It's a reality show. These four mooks play tricks on each other in a mall. play tricks on other people. And it's like the stupidest, sort of boringest... Does anyone listening watch this and like it? And can you tell me why? Because I just, you know, it just came on after... It's on, I think it's on True TV.
It is, yeah.
And so there's some stuff that we watched.
I'm Sorry. And
that's how I ended up watching it. I watched it after an episode of I'm Sorry. After my episode of I'm Sorry. And I... What a bad... It's been on for 6 seasons. And I've only just sort of now become aware of it. It just reminds me of, like, that show about meter maids... There's like a reality show about parking tickets.
I did not know this was a thing.
And I don't know if it's on anymore. I mean, it's not about parking tickets. It's like a tow truck company. There's like a tow truck reality show.
Oh, brother.
And I put it in the same category as that. Because I think to myself, who wants to look at this?
What was that show they would always have clips from on the soup that was like some small town security company?
Oh my god. That small town security company show was crazy.
Yeah.
That was like a David Lynch show. And I can't remember now what it was called. Hmm. But I watched about half a dozen episodes of that small town security show. because of the soup.
I see.
I don't remember the name of it. It's been a while.
Well, it's weird because True TV used to be Court TV.
Yes.
And then they went from being like all sort of trial-y stuff to more sort of like true crime or whatever. And then they segued to, I mean, I guess obviously this Impractical Jokers thing falls in the category of nonfiction but humor in the same way that Billy on the Street does. And I guess even Talk Show the Game Show. But now I'm Sorry is full up scripted narrative sitcom, you're telling me.
Yes.
Single camera?
Yeah.
So that's, all right. Again, no network ever stays on brand, like, except for unless you're ESPN, like,
right,
you know, the Cozy Homecrafts channel will eventually become the, you know, like
the extreme
spearfishing,
the true crime,
yeah,
ladies who kill their husbands, yeah, channel. Yeah.
I, you know, when OWN started, I said, well, it'll be snuff one of these days, you know, I mean, just, I was trying to think, like, the most diametrically opposed programming.
Yeah. So the so that's terrible. Impractical Jokers. Again, if you do watch that show, please tell me what it is that you find appealing about it, because I can't figure out what it could be. And then I watched the next couple episodes of I Am Jazz.
Okay.
She is undergoing consultations right now for gender confirmation surgery. She's right. About to turn 16. And that seems to be the sort of young end age where some trans people are getting
bottom surgery.
And
here's the thing I learned.
What?
Watching, sort of half watching the show with you. So it's been a big deal of late. It's a fairly relatively new phenomenon in the world of trans, where because people are coming out as trans at younger ages,
yes,
Jazz was like 3 or 5 or
she
something.
She was 4 or something like that, yeah.
So a lot of parents have been consenting to give their kids hormone blockers, which is what prevents, you know, if you're a trans boy but you have a biological girl body and you don't want to go full on into, you know, the craziness of puberty,
yes,
blockers will prevent that from happening, and vice versa.
Correct.
In the case of Jazz, because...
They worked very well.
And she talked before about, like, her terror of the mustache. Like, her, yes, family, you know, the men have very hairy faces.
The men are swarthy in her family, yeah. Yes.
So, you know, so it's been very effective, and it's done its work on that. However, it has inhibited the growth of her penis. And bottom surgery... is
often relies on there being
a penis of a certain size that can be you know, inverted whatever the process is to become a vagina. And so because of the hormone blockers, Jazz is not giving them a lot to work with.
She has. She said it. This is the scene. The scene is she's sitting on a, you know, in a park with her little girlfriends on the beach, and she's talking about her upcoming possible surgery and the consultations, and she's like, "I have a prepubescent penis," and all her little girlfriends, one of them is trans, but the others are cis girls, and they put them in sort of like interview cam, and one of them says, "You know, I never think about it, and I always forget that Jazz has a penis, and and she just sort of trails off.
I just
And when Jazz is explaining how the procedure, like she's telling all her friends, this is what happens, this is what they do, and here's this one girl reaction shot again, like, what? Like you can tell, it's like she feels for her friend, like she doesn't want her to have to go through, you know, painful surgery, but also the idea of all the things that have to happen for you, like, and that she, what's wonderful about the shot is that it's like the world is dawning on this child. Mm. You know, I have a trans friend, and I haven't thought about it other than that.
Yeah.
And now she's
now getting into the nitty gritty.
Now, And the funniest thing to me is that recently, in the media, one of the things that I'm very appreciative of is when trans celebrities go on talk shows. Mm-hmm. They've been doing a bang up job of teaching the media how to ask trans people questions and what questions you're even supposed to be allowed to ask. You know, like, you don't have any right to ask a trans person about their genitalia. You just don't.
No. It's funny. I was actually one of the jurors at Outfest.
Yes.
Who is not an LGBT person.
Yes.
But it works in the film world.
Yes.
I was talking with another juror who is a trans person.
Yes.
And sort of casually asked over the course of the conversation, "Oh, what was your name before?" And there was this kind of pause, and I just sort of went, "You don't get to ask that." and the trans lady was fine about it, and she kind of laughed it off. She didn't answer the question.
Right.
But we sort of kind of politely explained, yeah, that's not a thing you get to
ask. That's not a thing you get to ask. And that's wonderful, but at the same time, here's this 15-year-old girl on national television saying, okay, here's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because what it does then is it helps people sort of wrap their heads around, well, this is my friend, and something mysterious is going to happen in a hospital.
Right. It's a little less mysterious now.
And now it's less mysterious. Yeah. Yes. And I think, you know, that it is a nice thing for friends to have information about. Sure. You know, the world doesn't need it, but your friends want to know, and they want to care for you.
I think the world needs it, because the more people know, the less stupid questions they want to ask.
I understand, but you're never going to get the world to stop asking stupid questions.
Sure.
Now, a show like this is, I believe, helpful, particularly since Jazz is so unafraid of saying the things that need to be said,
right,
or that she feels need to be said.
Yeah.
And so, but it's just a wonderful sequence on the show of light bulbs going off in her little 14, 15-year-old friends' heads about, you know, the road that their friend has to travel, you know, to become the person she wants to be.
And I think doing it that way makes it less difficult for the viewer to feel like, Oh, I didn't know that either.
Right.
Oh, I didn't understand that either. And so, like, so it the show's not being like, duh, don't you know this? Like,
but going back to the hormone blocker thing.
Yes.
It will now be a little more complex, exactly, a little more complicated for Jazz to have the bottom surgery.
Because there's not the skin to work with.
Yeah. And so they're going to have to figure out something else. And she, this was eye-opening. Here's the part that was really eye-opening for me. Doctors who don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I mean,
they're in the room with these doctors who are like, and tell me about these hormone blockers, and tell me about, you know, and I'll tell you what we think is the right thing for you to do. And I'm like, you think?
Yeah. I mean, like, this doctor clearly knows how to do this procedure.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have enough of a large view of the trans process that he even knows.
I wanted to reach through that TV screen and yank her out of that office. Girl, go find a trans doctor.
Yeah, like, totally. Go to Trinidad, Colorado.
Is that the only place now that has the trans doctor?
It's not the only place. Right. That's like the place to go.
I feel grateful that she has very, very, very involved parents who will not
hand her over to.
They will not hand her over to just anybody. But anyway, I continue to love this show. She's, you know, doing this. It's like she's doing missionary work that's actually necessary. Mm. You know what I mean?
America has a learning curve. Mm-hmm. I think this is, she's a great sort of ambassador for this sort of thing.
Where am I next? Oh, I have an announcement to make.
Dun, dun, dun. What?
I'm blowing off The Bachelorette.
Oh.
Don't awe me. I don't have time. My life is running at a clip, and those episodes piled up and piled up and piled up, and Pilar kept saying, I'll come over and watch them with you, and I was like, I know, and I want to, and I just, it was hanging over my head like an Acme anvil. And I came to this decision as I was cleaning the house and packing for our trip to Atlanta. Screw it.
No.
I'm going to get the last few episodes, because they're almost done now. Mm-hmm. I'm going to get the last few so I can watch the, you know, the visits home and the finale. But all this backstory, I just... it's too much. I've been watching enough on Wendy to know.
Are you going to watch In Paradise?
Oh, yeah. I'll watch In Paradise. Because that's the sex contest.
Yes, that's the sped up train wreck, not the slow motion one.
So here's what I learned from Wendy.
Okay.
This week, 2 Chainz has perhaps unwittingly found himself in the middle of the Nicki Minaj Remy Ma feud.
Oh dear.
Yes. And this was because he invited Nicki Minaj to perform a bit of a verse in the middle of one of his new singles.
Featuring
Nicki Minaj, and she did so and used her time in that song to come after Remy Ma. And now Remy Ma is mad at 2 Chainz, and 2 Chainz is like, what am I going to... I'm going to tell Nicki Minaj what she can and can't say in my song? You know? So he's in trouble. Also, I'm personally upset at 2 Chainz because he let the lease run out on the pink trap house in Atlanta, and it's already been painted white and leased to someone else. And I was looking forward to going there with you to get our picture taken in front of the pink stove for Linoleum Knife and Fork.
In the yard.
We could have pretended to cook something on top of the pink stove. There was a pink stove and a pink car in the yard in front of the pink trap house, which is used. They did this as a promotional stunt for his new album, which is called Pretty Girls Love Trap Music.
So we missed the Pink Palace in Los Angeles, Jay Mansfield's house.
We didn't miss that. We went there a few times and brought people from out of town there. Don't you remember doing that?
Oh, God. Okay, you're right. Sorry.
What are you, crazy?
It's gone, but it's gone now.
It is gone now, but we have no choice.
And the pink trap house is now
gone. The pink trap house is now gone. I'm very upset.
Oh, well.
I mean, great. I'm going to be with your family all week. That's fantastic.
Who was going to drive you to the trap house?
Oh, we were all going to go. Oh, yeah. It was going to be a Duralde field trip to the pink trap house.
That now I'm regretting not getting to see you explaining to my family.
Hey, everyone. Here's I've got a plan for us today.
You know Two Chainz.
You know Two Chainz. We're going to go to the Pink Trap House. Everyone in the Duralde family, and we're going to have our picture taken in front of it.
Let's get in the cars, everybody.
Yeah. It was going to be you, me, and Pilar, and if Anna shows up, I don't know if she's going to be there this week. But yeah, we're not going to...
Oh, well.
We're not going to get to do that now.
I'm sure there'll be something else.
I'm pretty upset.
I'm sorry, baby.
We're done.
All right. Well, no, we have letters.
We do?
We do. I sent you some TV letters.
We have TV letters?
We do.
Yeah, here are letters. This is from Jesse. Fellas, I will take your recommendation under advisement, but only after I vent my spleen a little and say, number one, I'm pretty sure the Catholic Church isn't backing the TV version of The Exorcist.
That was just a theory.
As they hardly come off as the heroes. And number two, I feel like maybe Dave didn't journey far enough as the series, while also treating demons as real, shows racism, socioeconomic equality, and homophobia as the tools by which the demons operate. So one could see it as real life, or one could see it as a multi-layer kind of fantasy with some allegory, like American Gods. Bibbs, back me up here, please. Not saying you have to watch it. Dave can be bored. We're all free Americans. Just wanted to offer some information as a viewer who watched all 10 episodes. Sincerely, yours truly. Maybe I'll watch Pushing Daisies. We'll see.
Fair enough, Jesse. We didn't give up lot of chance to The Exorcist. Maybe it does get better.
David says, if you're going to make treats for Bibbs and Whitney, please, please, please make that icebox cake with the grape jelly. Take pictures of the process.
That's who gave us the idea.
Yeah. Ken says, I'm a New Jerseyan, and I have never heard of the New Jersey Sloppy Joe before. Then again, I'm from the part of South Jersey that's basically Philadelphia, so maybe it's a northern thing. Z says, I am picturing grumpy cat Dave with a bad fake beard and a dictionary-sized day planner. I don't know what this is in reference to.
Well, we were talking about your day planner and your at-a-glance and whatnot. And that you were grumpy.
My at-a-glance will not be mocked.
Too late.
I have a mug full of pencils sharpened and at the ready to fill in my at-a-glance with tasks. And the 15-minute chunk of the day during which I will complete that task. I said good day.
You're adorable.
I am. Tom Kaiser says, I'm also from the South Jersey that is pretty much Philadelphia, and my local diner totally has the New Jersey Sloppy Joe, and it's the only place I have ever seen it. Diner culture here is weird, to the point where suspicious fires happening while no customers are around are par for the course, so I don't put it past them in creating this weird-ass pastrami-slash-corned-beef abomination. You call it an abomination, but it sounds kind of delicious.
Yeah, it's got pastrami and corned beef in it. I'm halfway there.
Karen says, I smiled and nodded in complete agreement at the mere mention of someone just discovering Pushing Daisies. It's weird to be envious of her, but yes, oh, it is so good. It is peak Lee Pace prettiness. Lucas says, all right, I will watch Pushing Daisies. I mean, if the emperors demand it.
We do.
Your emperors demand that you watch Pushing Daisies. Now we're done.
Okay. So thank you for enjoying LKTV, a podcast of the television. And oh my goodness, now what?
I don't know. What?
Fork.
Knife and Fork,
a podcast of the food, which not even all of our Patreon subscribers get, or as we like to call it, a podcast about food from two film critics. And speaking of food, I have a question about lunch.
Yeah, speaking of food is not a segue for this show because this entire show is about food.
Well, this is true.
And okay, all right.
And we're speaking of food never, on the other shows,
if you've never listened to Linoleum, Knife, and Fork before, and it's entirely possible that you haven't, here's how it came to be. We were looking around at ourselves and our lives for
subject matter.
Another show to do. And people who listened to Linoleum Knife and to LKTV said, y'all talk about food so much, and y'all talk about Dave cooking so much, and recipes and restaurants and stuff, then why don't you just do a show that's all food? I want to hear a show that's all about baking and eating and stuff like that. So here we have it.
Yes.
So for you to say, speaking of food, is a dumb thing to say. Don't do that anymore. That's my advice for you.
You're not the boss of our life together
doing this show.
You have no say whatsoever in what comes out of my mouth.
I just did.
And I am ignoring you anyway.
Why don't you tell me how great lunch was?
Well, lunch was fine.
Fine?
Well, which leads me to my question.
Mm-hmm.
Did you put pepper on it?
Yeah.
You put pepper on arugula.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is already...
peppery.
Peppery.
You know what? I'm going to tell you, I like to pump up the jam.
Well, that's a lot of jam. A lot of pepper jam.
All right, ingrate. I'm going to tell you some things.
Please explain.
Perhaps you're aware that tomorrow morning at 6:45 a.m. we fly out of LAX.
Yes.
And at the beginning of this week, we had a full refrigerator of stuff and things.
Mm-hmm.
And what a brilliant, organized person I have been all week.
You've been like reverse Tetrising that fridge.
Yes.
And like getting every perishable thing out of it piece by piece.
And into our mouths.
Yes.
Through clever recipe building.
Mm-hmm.
Through augmenting the things we have with like one or two other ingredients that I will go to the store and get. For example,
you are the iron cheapskates.
All kinds of greens were in the fridge. I needed to use them, so I went and got some ready-made sausages,
mm-hmm.
the kind that you buy in the meat department that are like chicken apple sausage or spinach and feta, you know, like...
which are not what the Nathan's hot dog people are eating.
Artisanal sausages that you just... they're already pre-cooked. They're very quick, and... Most of the brands are pretty delicious, and so I did that. I got some spinachy ones today. This will be good on the leftover greens that we have. Well, the leftover greens we have were a mix of charred kale and spinach on my plate, because that was all that was left, and what was left for you was some arugula. You chose arugula, and I salted and peppered and drizzled a little oil on the greens.
Mm-hmm.
To make your arugula taste more arugula-y.
I think peppering arugula
is fine.
Putting too fine a point on it.
Nope, it's a good idea.
Okay,
it's fine. A taste explosion.
Look, lunch was delicious,
but... oh, you taste in all of that pepper.
It's like being in a room with nothing but a big fan and a mountain of pepper. Now, it was tasty, but I just was like, why is there... pepper on this? It's already arugula and arugula.
To make it more delicious.
Peppery. Okay, fine.
Put pepper on everything.
I'm not putting pepper on your chocolate chip cookies.
What if you did? How would they taste? They might be good.
You find out.
I might.
I'll let you experiment on that one.
I did make chocolate chip cookies.
Yes.
This week.
Your first success from the Dory's Cookies cookbook.
The Dory's Cookies is the Dory Greenspan, like, cookie baking Bible.
We'll post a link to it.
We will. Here's my story.
And you're sticking to it.
Our friend Sean is off in Virginia working on his MFA this summer.
Yes.
He's finishing.
Yes. Sean Abley, who's been on the show before.
Yes. He's been on Linoleum Knife.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. He's working on his MFA in playwriting. And he is greedy, and he got on Facebook and he said, "Hey friends, I like getting mail and I'm all alone here, so send me mail." So I had the big idea that I was going to bust into the Dory's Cookies cookbook, because it's been sitting on my shelf for a while, mm-hmm. not being used yet. It's new to me, but I hadn't dug into it yet. And I thought, I'm going to make him these vanilla French sables. Now, it's spelled S-A-B-L-E with an apostrophe over the E, so I guess it's sablé.
Sablé. It's not an apostrophe. It's an accent mark.
But I just can't call a cookie a sablé.
Well, a sable is already kind of, you know...
Well, that's I don't know. That seemed less highfalutin.
Did he say sable or
it's
gable?
Like when people walk around saying Ralph Lauren.
Yeah, right.
And you're like, I'm sorry, aren't there TV commercials for Polo products on television for the past 30 years? And the announcer is always saying
Ralph Lauren.
The world of Ralph Lauren.
Yes.
Do you think the announcer for the Ralph Lauren commercial is wrong and you've got your own way of saying it?
Do you have any of those Hydroche cookies? Or perhaps an Oreo?
Yeah. And so, but you know what? This cookie's not called Ralph Lauren. It's called S-A-B-L-E apostrophe E. And it sounds weird to me.
To call it a sablé?
To call it a sablé. It sounds like I'm trying to be fancy.
Do you have Denis Villeneuve's pecan sandies?
This is all moot, anyway, because I destroyed them. I ruined them.
Mm.
I don't know if it was because the house was too warm, because I had some friends on Facebook say, butter cookies like this really need a cooler house.
Oh, sure. Yeah, that would totally make sense. Because you were having a hard time cutting and, like,
yes.
lifting the cookies off
yes.
of, like, the wax paper
yes.
or whatever.
Yes, yes. Here's the other thing. Not only did they... Their formal construction was a problem,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't taste all that good either.
No.
Did
the recipe say unsalted butter?
The recipe called for unsalted butter and a teaspoon of salt. And I think what I have decided is that I need to put more salt in it. I'm going to still use unsalted butter because unsalted butter has a higher fat content. And you really want that.
In a butter cookie, sure, yeah.
But I need to, like, double up on that salt in that recipe because when something is just all sugar
mm-hmm.
and it's dusted with, you know, the coarse white sanding sugar.
Right.
When something is all sugar and butter, you want that. You want a little...
Salt kick.
You want a little saline sort of like...
yeah.
In there.
To underscore.
Yeah. But there just wasn't enough of it. Mm. They were entirely buttery and sweet.
And, yeah, you were like,
and they didn't taste like really anything.
You were all, oh, they didn't work, man. And I was like, oh, come on. And I tried one. I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. Just sort of hot nothing.
Yeah, there's like not much going on.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna try it again.
Okay.
And make it differently. I'm going to kick up the salt a little bit. And here I am telling you this when maybe they're supposed to taste just like butter and sugar. Maybe I'm wrong about how they're supposed to taste, but I do know that if they are only supposed to taste like butter and sugar, then I don't really want to eat them.
Here's a thought.
Yeah.
We're about to be going to an air-conditioned home for a week.
I could try them there.
You could make them there.
Yeah. But what I would really rather make there is the successful chocolate chip cookies I made from the same cookbook,
mm-hmm.
or, oh, those Nancy Silverton biscuits.
Oh.
I know your family loves me. I've been a part of this family now for
20 plus years.
Over 20 years. But I really feel like I could really like win them over for the rest of eternity. I know I don't have to win over anybody, but I know that I could earn their loyalty perhaps. Like if there were a war,
here's the thing.
They would fight on my side.
I don't know.
Because of these biscuits.
Those biscuits are amazing, and I love them, and they're one of the greatest things I've ever eaten in my life.
Yes.
I don't know that that is your in with my family.
What would
because
be the
in? Because they are crusty bread people.
Yes.
They like a biscuit, I'm sure. And, yes. You know, every so often we'll, like, put honey on one or whatever.
Yeah.
But ultimately, they are the noi pan guy. They're the dude who sits at the table and sees the plate of biscuits and is wondering where the actual bread is. Maria used to sit at the corner next to my dad. My dad would have, like, the cutting board with the loaf of French bread, all of which would get eaten because there were, like, nine of us sitting at the table.
I know.
And she would pick the crust off of it while it was sitting on the cutting board.
Yes.
Like, that's how down for the crust she is.
I know.
So I don't know that she'll eat the biscuit and be like, oh my God, this is so good. This is one of the best biscuits I've ever had. But it is not going to be a life-changing thing for her because she's not a biscuit person.
Are you saying that I shouldn't make them?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, don't get your hopes up that, like, you're going to start turning up in some wills because you make biscuits.
No. I don't need to be in a will. I just need to be, like, the leader of an army. And I need them to be in my army.
Also,
when the war comes.
Also, just be ready for the fact that we're going to Atlanta, and Beth, who gave me the biscuit mix,
yes,
is going to want to know why you haven't made them yet.
Because I was busy trying to perfect the Nancy Silverton biscuits.
Okay.
She'll understand when I make them for her.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Because she very... I mean, I traveled from Atlanta to L.A. with a bag of flour in my suitcase.
I know you did.
For you to try this thing.
And I promise I'm going to make
it. I know. It's been hot. It's been, you know what?
But I had to dig into this biscuit recipe that yes. called for five sticks of butter.
Oh, I was just telling... So one of the things I did at Outfest this week, there's a new documentary about the makeup artist Kevin O'Quinn.
Yes.
It's premiering on Logo in September. And the director, Lori Kay, talked about traveling to Louisiana to talk to his family members and pulling up to the house of, I think it was his birth mother, and how, like, she immediately gave her, like, you know, ham and a biscuit. And I hear in the audience our friend Ann Stockwell,
yes.
who spent a lot of her childhood in Louisiana, just
right.
cackle. So afterwards, I was like, speaking of biscuits, Dave White is onto something here.
I sure am.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I told them about the five sticks of butter, and she and Rita were both slack-jawed at the thought of it.
Oh, then I'll get them to come over next yeah. time I make them. Yeah. So, okay. Maybe I'll try those cookies again in Atlanta, because we are staying at Fernando's place.
Yeah.
The most air-conditioned of all the siblings' homes.
Mm-hmm.
I love that house. He understands. Fernando understands the need for a home to be 65 degrees.
Fernando starts sweating the second he gets out of the shower, so he keeps that his air conditioning game on fleek, as no one says anymore.
Yeah, you can't. That's not a thing to say, ever.
Hashtag twerking on fleek.
Twerking on fleek, however, is
never
perennial. Yeah. Okay, so to fix the problem with the butter cookies.
Yes.
And by the way, our friend, I tell him on Facebook in a chat, I ruined the cookies I was going to send you, and I'm going to try a different recipe, and they'll come in. And here was his response. Well, the clock is ticking.
I'm surprised he didn't give you the full, well, how do you think that makes me feel?
Yeah. I'm like, this is why we're friends, I guess. This is what we deserve.
You're a total ingrate.
The clock is ticking. So, simultaneously, we have a new neighbor.
Yes.
And you know, I like to make friendly nice with the new neighbors.
Well, with the one exception of the awful neighbor.
With the one exception of the awful neighbor who was a treacherous, violent meth dealer.
Yes.
Who is now...
no longer our neighbor.
No longer here. Thank God.
Mm.
But when a new person moves into number 8 or close to this end of the building,
mm-hmm.
you know, I like to bake a thing and give that thing to that person and say, welcome to our building. It's a nice place to live. Remember when the meth dealer moved in and you said, oh, you got to bake him stuff? And I was like, I have a bad feeling about this guy. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, you were right.
My gut was right.
He never made eye contact. That was certainly a start.
He was a miscreant from the start.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, new guy
is great.
Is great, and so I thought, okay, I'm gonna go no fail. I'm gonna go back to the Dory's Cookies cookbook. I'm gonna bake the classic chocolate chip cookie, and I'm gonna bake three dozen, a dozen for Sean, a dozen for the new neighbor, and a dozen for us. And I did that. And then you sprinkle that Maldon sea salt on top when they come out of the oven. So they've got that salty kick on top of them.
They were very nice. I don't know that they're the best chocolate chip cookies you've made.
Which ones do you think were the best?
Whatever kind you were making before this.
The Martha Stewart ones.
Is that what those were?
Those are very cakey.
I seem to recall you making other ones that were fairly thin.
Mm-hmm.
But really good.
Do you think it's because I used semi-sweet chocolate chips instead of the 63% cacao chocolate chips?
Could be. You know how
like the darker chocolate.
Yeah.
Do you think that's what it is that makes you think that they are not as your favorites just yet?
That could be it.
Well, who cares about you?
Well, I understand.
The fewer you eat, the more I get.
Oh, I ate plenty. I'm just saying, in the realm of your cookies.
So here's the great thing. The classic Dory, the classic recipe that she has is sort of an addendum to her new chocolate chip cookie recipe, which involves nutmeg and coriander.
Really?
And whole wheat flour. In addition to the all-purpose flour, so it's a little different flavor. Also, she provides variations that involve cinnamon, and here's my favorite possibility: Chinese five spice powder.
What?
Yeah.
Are you gonna try these?
Yes.
All right. Okay. I'm interested.
I'm gonna try all of those. Yeah.
And once it cools down again, I'm going to make more of those chocolate chip walnut coconut.
Those are very good.
Yeah.
And there's a recipe similar to that in the Dory's book. It's her version, what she calls a breakfast cookie.
Mm-hmm.
It's oatmeal based.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an oatmeal cookie with chocolate chips, walnuts, and coconut that I do. And it's... Yeah, it's
they're
almost
really nice, and like, I don't even like chopped walnuts.
It's like
cookies,
a handy little seven-layer bar almost.
Yeah.
But the yield is so small, though.
Like, that doesn't matter. Therefore, you and me.
All right.
We don't have to serve the whole world with stuff.
I know, but like, you know, come the holidays, I would like to be able to.
Once you make a double batch, then
I think I just might
distribute them to our treasured friends.
I may do that
if you have a minute.
I'm going to try to this year.
You often don't have a minute.
I know. If I can convince Frank DeCaro to let us take the year off of doing our Christmas show,
right?
I think that might help.
So, as I was saying earlier, I am the fridge evacuator.
Yes.
It is now Sunday afternoon. You have to go back to Outfest in like 6 minutes. I'm surprised we've even been able to record... this today. We had to skip Linoleum Nights because you had to pull off to the an Outfest thing, and now you're back here for just like a little bit of time.
Right.
This extra long Super Summer Splash episode has not actually been recorded all at once. It's been recorded in chunks here and there as you've had time to steal away. Although it sounds like we've just been sitting here all day, doesn't it?
Hasn't it? Wouldn't you?
You wouldn't even know the difference unless I just pulled back the curtain on the magic of podcasting.
That's right.
The
illusion of the show business.
But anyway, currently it is Sunday afternoon, and what is left in the refrigerator right now is about a cup of arugula, 6 medjool dates, 1/2 of a red onion, and 3 chunks of various cheeses that are wrapped in paper and Ziploc bagged and put in the cheese drawer. Also, some rosemary and some thyme. That's it.
Nice.
And all the condiments in the door.
Right.
We are going to return from Atlanta to a literal empty refrigerator. But I feel so proud that we have removed everything perishable, 98% of the perishable items we have consumed.
Yes.
And not wasted.
Yes.
By letting them sit for 8 days unattended. Also, the refrigerator won't have to work as hard while we're gone.
Well done, us.
I'm pretty great. I do want to say one thing, though.
What's that?
We had half a gallon of milk in the refrigerator this morning. I'm sorry, we had 1 quart of milk left in the refrigerator this morning. Mm-hmm. And yesterday, when I was at Whole Foods getting the sausages mm-hmm. for lunch today to use up the greens, I found a cereal.
Oh.
A breakfast cereal. Do you remember, if you have been listening to Linoleum Knife and Fork, do you remember the all-breakfast cereal episode? Where we talked about the oldest cereal on the market, which they do not carry at our local grocery store, nor do they carry it at Target or Ralph's. For some weird reason, however, they carry it at Whole Foods. And it's really inexpensive. It's like $3 a box. And this is, we live in a world now where cereal is $4, $5, $6, $7 a box, depending on what you're buying.
Right.
Uncle Sam. Uncle Sam cereal is the oldest cereal still on the market. It was invented at the turn of the 20th century.
And it tastes that way.
I need to stand up and walk into the kitchen and go get the box to find out what the hell is in this.
Yeah.
Let
me just say, it's an expensive, but you get what you pay for. I mean, I recently, you know, we have a thing where, you know, our local grocery store is a little inflated on prices, but there's always some cereal on sale, and so we'll get whatever the cereal on sale was. Recently, I bought a box of Bare Naked flakes with, like, little granola chunk whatever things in it, and it was okay. It was a little bland, but over the time thinking, oh, this is not liking it. That is a flavor explosion next to the grist that is Uncle Sam.
Here's what's in it. Whole wheat kernels, whole flaxseed, salt, barley malt.
That's it.
I put it in a bowl. I put some milk on it. I let it sit for a minute because it looked a little nubbly.
Yeah.
Like it might have been made of twigs and sticks and nuts and rocks and stuff.
Bark ends.
Yeah. Let it sit for a little bit. And I took a bite. It tastes like wood chippings.
Mm-hmm. Like you're devouring the bottom of a clean hamster cage.
Yeah. And then I put an entire tablespoon of sugar on it.
I put a little half and half in mine, just something to try and liven it up.
And it tasted like wood chippings that were lightly sweet.
Ugh. Yeah, this is dreadful. I mean, this is...
It is truly...
This is the kind of thing... Like,
it is truly a cereal made of integrity.
Yes.
Nothing else.
When you see like an old sitcom where they make a joke about the health food store.
Yes.
This is the kind of flavors you're going to find at the 1971 health food store.
Yeah. I have never tasted a cereal that I disliked this much.
Mm.
But there's still some left in the box.
Ugh.
And when we come home, I'm going to figure out a way to make it palatable. That's my goal myself.
Hide it in a bowl of sugar smacks.
I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to pour it into a saucepan
mm-hmm.
with some milk and a little bit of that half and half to really sort of mm-hmm. thicken it up.
Make a gruel.
And then I'm going to add some stuff to it.
Maple syrup.
Maple syrup or some cinnamon or something that will, like, give it some life.
Yeah.
Here's the thing I don't understand. It has been on the market for over 100 years.
Yeah.
Who eats it?
They should be selling it in the Vermont Country Store catalog next to, like, the Tangy lipstick. Like, I can't imagine anybody who was born after World War II willingly eating this crap. It's horrible. And we still need to do the thing where we get the big shredded wheat and put hot, sweet, milky coffee on it.
Okay, sure.
I totally want to try that.
All right.
One of our listeners suggested that.
We can try that, I guess. Do you have letters for me?
Hang on.
Yes, we do have letters. From Jack.
Yay!
Number one. Gary Cotty should show up reluctantly and then be hilarious more often. I agree with you.
Yes.
Yeah.
No argument here.
Our friend Gary Cotty, who is also our neighbor, he's over here all the time eating the things I cook. If you saw his kitchen, you would understand why. It is virtually non-existent. It is the size
of a closet with a hot plate.
It's the size of a closet with a teeny tiny teeny little dorm refrigerator and a microwave oven on top of that. He doesn't even have a hot plate anymore.
Really?
Yeah. He just was like, I don't do anything.
It's a closet without a hot plate.
All he ever did was like fry a egg in it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. She continues, Marcona almonds. A good God. One of the reasons I have cleaved myself to the Arclight here in Chicago is due to the fact that they serve a bucket of Marcona almonds as a snack.
Ooh. Our Arclight doesn't do that.
Despite moving into early middle age, I cannot resist them, even if they feel like broken glass in my insides later. Brandon says, I only eat Kraft. Now, mind y'all, if you haven't listened to this show before, these are people responding to things we talked about before.
Yeah, they're not like just non sequiturs.
I only eat Kraft macaroni and cheese when childhood nostalgia erases the memories of the last time I ate it.
Exactly.
It is awful and it makes my stomach churn for hours. Yet every 2 years or so, I forget that fact and pick up a box. The same could be said of ramen noodles and bologna sandwiches. You mean like that instant ramen?
Yeah. I haven't had at-home ramen in ages.
This is from Steve. He says, since the early days of LiveJournal, I have enjoyed your tangential references to Gary Cotty. Long-time readers understand, of course, that Gary Cotty is a fictional construct in service of the narrative. However, it was a nice touch for you to enlist a voice actor to bring the character to life. Does he or she do multiple voices? Perhaps next week he or she can portray Extreme Aaron.
That's a deep cut from LiveJournal.
He continues.
Yes.
For me, boiled peanuts meant childhood summers with my grandparents in Bogalusa, Louisiana. They were sold in sweaty, greasy bags by a neighbor lady. The boiled skins peeled easily to give me the salty, salty, oh-so-salty peanuts within. Add to that the shaved ice sold at the same corner stand and me standing in line, sweating off the anti-mosquito off that was sprayed on me from head to toe. Ah, the summers of my youth. So in conclusion, if you hate boiled peanuts, then you hate summer and my grandparents, you bastards.
Well, we do hate summer, but your grandparents are lovely people.
Yes.
Bogalusa?
Bogalusa.
Wow. Okay. Look, Georgia's got some crazy names too.
This is from Urso. He says, it's funny that you mentioned getting boiled peanuts on trips to North Georgia. We did the same thing. One thing you left out was that the signs would inevitably read bold, B-O-L-D, P-N-U-T-S.
This is true.
Bold peanuts.
No, almost invariably, yes.
Yes. And then finally, the last one is from Eric, who says, I will drink your champagne if I'm ever in Los Angeles. Seriously, though, why are you storing the champagne in the fridge? Maybe keep one bottle in there. For instant host emergencies, keep the rest on the floor, in a closet or something, or re-gift them when you go to someone else's house. I'm sure you have your reasons. Enjoy the day, gents. Eric.
We do, in fact, have our reasons.
In Jackson Heights, we have our reasons. We don't have air conditioning. Yeah. And
we have to refrigerate red wine.
We put red wine in the refrigerator to keep it from turning.
Yeah.
Because the apartment just gets too warm for wine. And I will confess that I did not realize that you could store champagne at room temperature.
Yeah.
I thought you had to keep it cold.
Nope.
No. All right. Well,
Do you not see it in the store on the shelf all the time?
I don't look at it. Okay. I don't think about it. Okay. If I'm in the liquor section, it's to buy a bottle of red wine, if it's to buy some beer, or it's to get some weird flavored liqueur that I need for a recipe.
I see.
Yeah. So, hey.
Yes?
There's this thing. I don't know if I need it or not. Tell me if you think I need it.
Lay it on me.
It's called the Butter Ribbonizer.
Tell me more.
You stick the butter in this thing, mm-hmm. and you squirt it out, and it makes your butter come out in like a ribbon, so that you don't have to spread anything. All that messy spreading it's so difficult.
I'm running my wrist across my forehead.
I will tell you that I saw this in a TV ad.
Uh-huh.
You send away for it.
Of course.
Are you tired of trying to spread your own butter with a knife?
Not available in stores.
It's so hard. Well, here's a butter ribbonizer. You stick the butter in the thing, and it shoots a ribbon of butter out onto whatever you like, onto your corn on the cob. No more having to try to put a butter pat on your corn on the cob and have it fall off. Oh, God,
oh,
everything's
no,
ruined.
Such a mess.
This shoots a ribbon of butter out onto whatever you want, onto your toast, where you can ribbonize your butter on your toast, onto your corn on the cob, just directly onto your tongue.
That sounds ridiculous.
It does, and I think I want it.
Because the challenge of butter
is
only if the butter is too hard to spread anyway. So
yeah.
Even if you just shoot out a ribbon of hard, cold butter, I mean, yeah, unless it's something like hot corn on the cob or freshly popped toast, you still have this slab of cold butter. It's not going to spread.
Right.
If they need to invent, like, a knife that has a battery that makes the blade a little bit warm so that you can, like... Shave.
Are you tired of having a cold knife?
No, so that it'll cut into the butter.
Are you fed up with the cold knives in your life?
It'll melt the butter as you're spreading it onto a thing that isn't.
Are you in agony over the cold knife and the cold butter? And all the spreading. Hey, dummy, you need the butter ribbonizer.
What would the butter ribbonizer do with your frozen butter that you had to do for the biscuits?
Nothing.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
No.
What are you looking forward to eating in Atlanta, if anything?
Everything that is served to me.
Well, yes, besides that. Is there any sort of regional thing you want to go get?
I never eat regional Georgia food in Atlanta. I eat the Spain food that I get in the houses of the Spain families.
Oh, come on. We've been for barbecue.
We have been to barbecue.
You like that barbecue.
I like a barbecue.
Yeah. I want some barbecue. I haven't been to the Varsity in years. I wouldn't mind going to there.
Yeah, that's fine, I guess.
Well, I grew up on it, and I want to go to Crystal without you.
Enjoy that.
I'm gonna.
It's not gonna happen with me.
Fine.
God, that stuff is ghastly.
It's a sometimes food.
Sometimes in hell.
All right, we are nearly topping out on 3 hours. So this is Linoleum Knife Alexander Platz. We hope this has
Super Summer Splash.
We hope this Super Summer Splash has filled your week without us. And we're taking a week off, but we will be back the week of July 24th with more movies, more TV, more food, more nights, all the things.
Yes. And if you want these shows,
yes.
LKTV, you subscribe to that at $4 per month. That's $1 per week. That's $1 per episode.
Yeah.
50 cents per person.
Host.
I think we're worth it.
Totally.
Linoleum Knife and Fork, you know, you got a little extra. That's $7 a month subscription. You get LKTV and Linoleum Knife and Fork. Completely non-essential listening, but we like it.
Yeah.
Maybe you do. I don't know.
And then, you know...
I hope you do.
There are levels above...
Some of y'all do. You're already subscribing.
There are levels above that with more stuff. Anyway, go to patreon.com/linoleumknife. If you liked these extra shows, get them more regularly. And
get regular.
And get regular with Relax. Hey, thank you, Blue, for our theme music that we played 3 times during this episode. It's amazing. You're amazing. Go check out his stuff at bluetopia.com. BLEUTOPIA. Check out our friends on the internet. Go to ChristyLemire.com. Listen to the B-Movies podcast and Cancel Too Soon, hosted by Bibbs and Whitney. Listen to The Schmoes Know and Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley and The Sewers of Paris and The Comics Canon and Speaking of the comics canon, I will be making an appearance on the show with Kurt and Kevin while I'm in Atlanta. So definitely check out for that. I'll let you know when it goes up. Listen to Fat Guys of the Movies and the Criterion Cast, Film Spotting, SVU, Secretly Timid. Check out a new show from Matt Pivovarczyk, who is the former co-host of After Smash. He has a new show called All Things Cozy. It's a very cozy show. In the first episode, they talk about his favorite cozy mystery writer. And at the end of the show, they review the candle that has been burning throughout the taping of the show. So, you know, it's a very cozy show. You should check it out. Like us at all the places that you can like us, at the places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio or TheLounge.com and Podbean and CastBox. Subscribe to the show for free at iTunes and leave us a positive review there. 5 stars would be great. It does help people find the program. Follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with any questions or comments. That's also where you can PayPal us for our amazing Linoleum Knife t-shirt, our original shirt, black shirt with Linoleum Knife across the chest in white letters, available in all the sizes. It's $22 if you live within the United States, and you can PayPal us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. And if you live outside of the United States, email us at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com and tell us where you live, and we'll tell us how much extra that you will owe us for postage. So that is pretty much it. Have a great mid-July while we are away from the mic. We appreciate all of you. Go subscribe to our show at patreon.com/linoleumknife if you have not already. And until next time,
goodbye.